Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/Tim. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/TIM.
A Canadian court has actually issued an injunction on honking horns in Ottawa. I kid you not, they have banned honking your horn. Wow. It's kind of crazy to think the honking is working. That's it. Literally just pulling up in a car and going honk, honk. Has the entire political establishment losing their minds, people pretending to get hit by trucks, falling over and flopping on the ground in the streets, and according to reporting from Andy Ngo, actually having Antifa get in SUVs and hit people. Man, the honking really is making these people lose their minds. But if you watch the videos, it's regular people. They're celebrating, they're dancing, and they're saying no, and it's spreading. Now there's rumors circulating, at least I think it's Rolling Stone reporting this, that Republicans want truckers to shut down the Super Bowl. Okay. Well, we'll get into all that stuff. There's a lot going on with the great honking. You've got police arresting people, seizing gas cans. So this will be an interesting subject to talk about. We also have Rumble, the video platform offering Joe Rogan $100 million over 4 years to leave Spotify and join their platform. I believe they have the funds to do this. They had that special purpose acquisition company merger thing. They're going to be getting about $400 million. It's been reported. But I don't see why Joe would leave the platform. I just don't see why he would do it for the same amount of money. The concern is, I guess, Rumble's like, Joe, you know, come over here and you won't be censored. And Joe's like, they're telling me not to say the N-word. And I don't think Joe's going to want to jump from Spotify to Rumble for the sake of that. You know, it doesn't make sense. But we'll talk about everything that's going on there. We got Peter Thiel stepping down from Facebook to focus on campaigning for Republicans. So this should be really, really interesting. Plus some news about Facebook stock and the Olympics. So joining us today to talk about all of this is Greg Price.
Thanks for having me.
You want to introduce yourself?
I'm Greg Price. I work for a company called X Strategies LLC. We're a digital strategy firm, and we work with a bunch of conservative members of Congress and candidates and nonprofits and super PACs. We work to elect America First candidates and unelect the rhinos. I was at the Daily Caller before that, too.
Unelect the rhinos. Mm-hmm. Seamus?
Here I am, Seamus Coughlin, creator of Freedom Tunes. We actually plan on releasing a cartoon tomorrow. If you guys want to head over there, hit that subscribe button, get notified. And I am once again back to have a conversation with my friends about some interesting issues.
Lovely, amazing humans. Monday night, coming at you from Maryland, Ohio, I was going to say. What? That's where I'm from originally. Maryland, United States.
Those are two states, not a city and a state.
What's up, Canada? I'm with you tonight, baby. You're 500 miles away, and I hear you loud and clear.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm loving all this talk of the honking. I'm really excited to hear more about what's going on in Canada. It is a little bit dark at the moment, but hopefully it brightens up. We'll see what happens.
But don't forget, go to timcast.com, become a member, help support the show, support the work we do, support all of our journalists. As a member, you'll get access to exclusive members podcasts of this show that go up Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. So when we wrap the live show, we record for an additional half an hour with our guests, and those go up on the website. As a member, you'll get to watch those, and it helps keep the light on, keep all the lights on. Now, we also have a bunch of stickers and shirts. You can see we have the free Hunk Hunk premium t-shirt, the free Hunk Hunk premium sweater. We have Honk a Boot and Fine Doot stickers and free Honk Honk stickers as well. If you buy this stuff, you'll be supporting the message, but the funds go to supporting the work we do. If you guys want to directly support the great honkening, you can go to their Give, Send, Go. And I want to make sure the distinction is clear, because if you prefer to support the movement, you know, this is our merch. Just we wanted to make something that celebrated and supported the idea of the great honkening. Of course, the Free Hong Kong is modeled after the Free Hong Kong flag. So you can check that out if you're so interested. But let's get into that first big story. From theweek.com. Court issues 10-day ban on honking in downtown Ottawa. A Canadian judge issued a 10-day injunction Monday banning protesting truckers from honking their horns in downtown Ottawa. Quote, "Tooting a horn is not an expression of any great thought I'm aware of," Justice Hugh McLean of the Ottawa Superior Court said. He also said the ban on honking would not rob demonstrators of their right to protest. A convoy of truckers and other demonstrators protesting Canada's COVID-19 policies entered on January 29th, where they've been for some time. Let me respond to this here, Justice Hugh McLean. Honking absolutely is an expression of a great thought. He doesn't understand memes. But more importantly, the state. This is Canada, by the way. It's not the U.S., so they can have their backwards garbage policies or whatever. The state should not be deciding what is someone's expression. What comes next? Now people are saying, I'll just yell honk. I'll just get a megaphone and just yell honk into it. Okay, well, I think this is a ridiculous. This is ridiculous, but I will say it shows, you know, the great honking has worked. It's worked to the point where a court has had to issue one of the most ridiculous injunctions I've ever heard of. Honking is forbidden.
Sounds like they're going to try and get them out of there now in the next 10 days. They're like, let's buy ourselves a little time. We'll see if we can get them out. If they can't, 9.5 days from now, they'll issue another ban for 10 more days or whatever. You know, only 15 days to slow the spread of these truckers all around the country.
I just think it's funny because it's Canada. It's Canada. Honking is banned. It's worked on so many levels, right? First, people are posting memes where they're like, who would have thought the answer to Clown World would have been honking?
I know.
It's just so good. And then it's happening in Canada of all places, and they got the goose.
Yeah.
So it's just perfect. Like, we live in some kind of constructed reality.
I gotta
simulation.
Say, let me put this on the table. I've been thinking a lot about this. Honking is it can be very, you could argue that it's a kind of noise. Weapons are real. You can destroy someone with excessive amounts of noise. You can hurt someone with that. The CIA knows it. They work with those things. So a lot of noise can be weaponized. Now, apparently these people are honking and they're violating maybe civil rights, noise violations. But for the Canadian government to start to violate their human rights of like food and fuel seems like that's stoking the bear. Well, this is the great Canadian bear.
Well, this is a Canadian government that, as we know, was seizing their gasoline too. Like, yeah. There's this uprising of workers that's pissing off the people in power in Canada, and it seems that they'll go to great lengths in order to shut them up.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. They're basically placing sanctions on these people, and then they're arguing that honking is an act of violence.
Honk.
Yeah.
That's honk, honk. I've been wondering.
Well, so I was going to say, Ian, I think you're not quite rolling a one on this one.
Okay, you got like a three or something?
No, maybe a 10.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think there's a guy who's got a train horn, and people are laughing about it because it's triggering people. I'm like, dude, I got to be honest. The train horn might be a little much. Like, honking your horn is honking your horn. Everybody's got one. But mounting a train horn to a vehicle and then blaring it, like, yeah, I mean, that's not helping your cause out. You know, honking your horn is annoying. Protests, as AOC says, are supposed to make people uncomfortable. So honking your horn, hey, man, more power to you. If they say, hey, guy, you brought a train horn to downtown Ottawa, I'd be like, yeah, dude, that's like, come on, it's a little much, isn't it? I mean, it's funny, but
it's when all the trucks come together, they create like a mega horn, which is like way worse than way louder than a train horn. I don't know what to do because I support these truckers implicitly.
I want to
help the cause, but I will still acknowledge that this noise can be used as a form of violence. And so I understand kind of both sides of this.
Yeah.
Hold on. Like, what do you mean by violence?
Yeah.
Like, it can harm. Like, if I take a big loudspeaker and put it next to your head and do it, you'll be like, ah, and then it'll hurt your hearing. And then it might even start to make you angry, which makes you stressed.
It can be really annoying, but it's not like the truckers are going, he supports the mandates, get him. And then like putting their head next to the horn and honking so they go deaf. I mean, they're honking their horns in a way that makes people uncomfortable. You also have to consider is that these truckers themselves are here day in and day out, and it's going to get annoying to them on some level. So I think they can self-regulate here. I think it's insane that the Canadian government would tell them they're not able to express themselves in this way.
I could see if you're a citizen in Ottawa and living in downtown Ottawa and all day, every day, all you hear is honk, honk, honk. I could see how that would get annoying. At the same time, it's not like they're burning your buildings down like in other protests that we've seen before. So I could see how that would be annoying. Yeah, no, did the government step in like this, like in the summer of 2020 in Canada or in the United States?
No, because that would be fascist.
Well, though. How bad was the rioting in Canada though? I honestly don't know.
Well, the movement was everywhere.
Yeah.
Might not have been as bad as America, but.
Was Black Canadian Lives Matter like smashing windows and burning buildings down or anything
probably
like that?
Probably not as bad as America, but the movement was, you know, they you wouldn't, wanna, but like, you know, the, you it's, again, it's the politics behind this. I don't think, you know,
I just searched Ottawa on Twitter. I saw this video, I think yesterday, which is what brought this up in my mind, is a guy in Ottawa got his video and was like, hey guys, just so you know, this is what it's like all day. And it's like, just nonstop. So I understand. I would go freaking crazy if all of a sudden I'd support or unsupport, all of a sudden just maddening noise all around me.
Yeah, you know, I don't care. You want to know why?
The insurance companies will pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if you get ear damage, you got insurance. What's the problem?
Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347.
It's a language of the unheard. Is the hunk.
Medical insurance.
Actually, I don't agree with that. That's a ridiculous notion.
Yeah.
But I don't actually care about the discomfort of these people, because as the government was ruling by decree, they sat back and said, sure. And then when the government started cracking down on the truckers, imposing will by decree on them, and the truckers said stop, the people sat in their homes and said, hey, I'm not getting involved. I don't care they're doing it to you. In fact, I'll vote for them and empower them and pay them money and ensure they can keep putting their boot on your neck. And then the trucker said, I'm going to toot.
Yeah.
I'm a honk honk. And now they're I'm honking. No, sorry, buddy.
And Ian, you're absolutely right that it is extremely annoying. And if these people were outside of my window honking, I would be annoyed as well. But at the same time, if it's a question of whether we're going to allow a group of people to be annoyed or allow a group of people to have their rights violated, I'm going to choose to let those people be annoyed.
Yeah, you said that was pretty insightful. What you said just a second ago, Tim, about how, like, because I'm thinking about now the German citizens, when they supported, just allowed the Nazis to do their thing and just stood by and let it happen. When the Allied troops came in there, they didn't. You know, those people, they had to sit by and listen to the honking. They weren't allowed to be like, stop. You know, you sit by and watch tyranny take hold. Get ready to face some repercussions.
It's not just that. It's a lot of these people are voting in these politicians over and over again. Like they vote for Trudeau. They vote for the people who are putting in place these mandates. So it's like, listen, we want you to hear the repercussions of your actions. Elections have consequences. Ottawa votes for these people. I'm sorry. You know, it's funny. I'll tell you this. The people who live in Ottawa who don't vote for this are outside dancing in the streets, cheering on the trucks and the protests. That's the people who live in Ottawa. I'm not going to pretend like I live there. I've watched some of the live streams. I watched Viva Fry. He's got a great stream. And I've seen a lot of the videos. And there's people with Canadian flags jumping up and down. They're celebrating. These are people who live in the city. The people who are screaming and complaining about the honking are the people who did vote for Trudeau and don't support the truckers. I don't care if you come out and say that you voted for Joe Biden, I'm going to be like, okay, well, now you're going to be uncomfortable for having supported a man who's caused all of these problems for us. The death of the civilians in Afghanistan, the rising gas prices, the failing economy. There's some good things about the economy, but you can't come out and be like, we lost 2 million jobs and brought back 1.5, so we're doing great. Like, no, you're doing bad. And if you want to come out and be like, you supported him, then I'll be like, prepare to be uncomfortable as I protest the guy you voted in.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that when you're looking at this situation, and these mandates and the fact that these people were completely in favor of them, and that's resulted in these protests, and now they're really upset by the honking. You kind of have to put it in perspective. Ultimately, what's going to make their lives worse? The hyperinflation, which is occurring because we decided to print trillions of dollars, the broken supply chains, the fact that it's more difficult to
different
get food.
Different country.
And it's true, but also our economies are really interconnected. And if the dollar isn't doing as strongly and we're not trading with them as much, or the supply chain is broken down in our country, that's going to affect their lives too. And a couple horns honking outside your window day in and day out for as long as this protest lasts is not going to have as much of a negative effect on their lives in the long term.
The other thing you have to think about is like the people doing the honking and the protesting. These are the people who during the pandemic, while everyone was, all them were staying inside, these were the people who were, you know, bringing you your packages to your door,
yep,
bringing the supplies everywhere.
Yeah.
That was probably more annoying than just hearing some honks every day. I'm sure there
were
lots.
Dude, it's amazing. These are people who sit inside, vote for politicians who lock everything down, and then demand a government just gives them money.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from this girl, and I don't remember who, but it was like a journalist, and she was like, who do we have to appeal to save us from this, was basically the tweet. And I'm like, there's a mindset in humanity of like, where is daddy to save me? Who's going to come fix this? And it's like, dude, you fix it. It's you.
Seriously. These people love to be like, I'm going to vote for the authority to do whatever they want. Then go and sit back and say, solve my problems for me. That vote causes problems for everybody else who are now dancing in the street and honking horns, not even smashing windows or anything like that. And now these people are crying about it. Dude, I have very little sympathy. I'm sorry, man. That's just reality. These people need to live in the real world. You know, we've talked about the fourth turning. We've talked about, you know, hard times make strong men make good times weak men, etc. And this is the problem with a lot of these people who live in these big cities. They want everything done for them. They get paid ridiculous salaries for ridiculous jobs. Not everybody, but a lot of them. The people, like in New York, it's really bad, but there's a lot of city jobs that make no sense. And they've just not experienced any real hardship. This is the first time, I think about how crazy this is. There's that video of the guy who looks like the pregnant man emoji. Have you seen this? He's wearing the blue jacket and he's got like the belly. So people have put the pregnant man emoji on him. And he's like, I can't sleep. I'm losing my mind or whatever. And it's like, bro, calm down. You know, this is the reason why I have very little sympathy is probably because I lived on a busy street and I hear honking all day, every day, nonstop. But I've also experienced, you know, like actual hardship. And so when I hear people screaming and crying about honking, I'm like, geez.
Yeah.
Where did they grow up? Inside like a fluffy padded room that was like pastel colors with animals painted on the wall?
Well, the West.
Well, that's a very interesting point because Ottawa is one of the richest cities in Canada. And so for months, at least in the United States, you had BLM burning down some of the most impoverished neighborhoods in the country and making life impossible for the people who lived there. And our media thought that that was just fine. But now when working class people go into an upper class neighborhood and honk their horns too loudly for too long, it's a nightmare.
I will say, as much as they are, it is a different country, our culture completely overlaps.
Exactly.
So you've got American leftist journalists who are on the side of the government of Canada, and then you've got American, you know, libertarian, conservative, moderate, post-liberals who are on the side of the great honkening. Yeah. I genuinely believe, you know, 90%+ of people support the honkening. You know, you're never going to convince me because I look at the comments on Reddit, even the astroturfing isn't working. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, man. I just won't believe that actual grassroots, regular leftists. I don't mean online personalities, regular people that if you go to them and say, how do you feel about the workers rising up? They'd be like, oh, that's pretty cool. How do you feel about the truckers rising up? Glad they're rising up against the establishment.
Yeah, no. And that's sort of my point. Even though, yes, obviously this is occurring in a different country, our media is going to empathize with the upper class people who are being inconvenienced in Canada more so than they would lower class people in the United States having their actual business burnt down.
Well, it goes to show that the media speaks for the interests of, you know, the ruling class and the powerful. And even in Canada, where the media is actually controlled by the government, like, the media are actual government entities. So, you know, it's, in that case, they're actually on the side of the government. And like, I was looking at some of the coverage in Canadian media and I was like, yeah, you can really tell.
Yeah.
It's amazing. One of the first articles we read on the show, it was like the far right group that has been known for vandalism and stealing food from the homeless.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like, dude, that's just not true. Now there's this story. Did you guys hear about these guys trying to break into a building and burn it down with people inside?
No.
And these left-wing activists, many Americans, they're, well, quote unquote journalists, are trying to claim that it's definitive and proven Bro, it's a video of two guys. We don't know who they are. They walk in a building, set fire something on the ground, and then tape the door shut and leave. That's crazy. Arrest those guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then they're just like, this proves it. Let's talk about what the cops are doing. We got this story from TimCast.com. Police seize fuel and supplies from protesters in Ottawa Freedom Convoy. Multiple vehicles and fuel have been seized, police said, as they extend their efforts to end the Freedom Convoy. Basically, they're now saying anybody who brings in fuel is going to be aiding them. It's illegal. Mm-hmm. Anybody who provides material support. And there's even an insinuation by Trudeau that Americans are interfering and they want to look into where this funding is coming from. Well, I don't know what Canada is going to be able to do to an American who gave $5 on Give, Send, Go. I just don't see them pulling anything off. But yo, how insane is this getting? They declared a state of emergency in Ottawa. You know, I saw a story, I don't know if it's true, that Ottawa cops are exempt from the vaccine mandates. This is how they play the game. The enforcers get special acts. It's like the Hunger Games, man.
Wow.
Yeah. No, nothing to say? Nobody?
Oh, geez, so much to say. How do it's I even take, start to take,
formula, like take it all in? Every now and again, everyone talks like, the same. Every now and again, it's kind of like a Mexican standoff here. We're looking around who's going to say something
I know,
first.
I don't want to interrupt. About, talk how do you talk somebody. About civil disobedience? Like, okay, what they're doing is civilly illegal, probably. Illegal. What the hell does that even mean? Illegal.
Well, like, what was crazy to me was seeing like the brand account for the Ottawa Police Department like cheering on GoFundMe's decision to, you know, take this money away from the truckers. You have like this unholy alliance of like the government, law enforcement, big corporations, you know, and then you have this like work, you have these who are just like taking away the rights of working class people. And, you know, we complain about a lot about that in America, but man, like it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like the Ottawa police just cheering this on.
Isn't there a word for that? When the government and big corporations
starts with
are working together to control.
Yeah, there's a word. Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like
fascism.
The F word.
The F word, yeah. I think you're thinking about the F word.
Yeah, so earlier you mentioned how Canadian media is basically controlled by the government. One thing I find very disturbing is that with the United States media, we do have media which is controlled by private corporations, but honestly, can you imagine it acting all that differently if it was controlled and regulated by the government? They continually cheer for bigger government. They insult people and they smear them for calling for more freedom and calling for the restrictions the government imposes upon the average person to end. And when you look at the situation in Canada, like I mentioned, it's clear that our private media is more sympathetic to their state media in Canada and the views that they hold than they are to the views of the actual people of our country or theirs.
Bro, there's no mask anymore. It's funny when...
The mask mandate is over.
No, I mean the figurative mask that we ever assumed the media was on our side. I'm done having that conversation. It's been 10 years. Anybody who still thinks the media is telling the truth is probably lying to you, to be completely honest. Even regular people, when you ask them, like the press rates abysmally low in terms of credibility. There was this funny poll from a few years ago and it was like, who do you trust? Like, how much trust do you give in these institutions? And the press was on the bottom at like 17%.
When, what's his name? Glenn Greenwald got booted out of The Intercept. That was a big like red light for me. It's that structure of that old media thing doesn't work anymore. You can't be honest in that situation because there's too many corporate donors trying to get a hold of you and your money.
So like it's not even that just that they're biased to one side of the political aisle. They're beholden to corporate interests, a lot of these media outlets, and a lot of the time obviously, as we said before, there's this unholy alliance between government in America and big corporations, and the media is a part of that. You have like an institution like the Washington Post that's owned by the second richest man in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously their coverage is going to not reflect the views of, you know, people in working class people in Ohio or working class truckers, speaking out against these mandates. You know, they support all these things.
You know how I see it? I'm like thinking about the media and it reminds me of those movie tropes where it's like there's a wife and then her husband runs up and she has a gun and he's like, honey, it's me. Put down the gun. And then all of a sudden, another like clone of her husband runs to the other side. He's like, no, I'm your real husband. And she's like, I don't know which one is real. I don't know where that trope came from, like the original movie. But it feels like there's like a normie, regular American sitting on their couch. And we run in and we're like, we're telling you the truth. We're challenging the lies. And then, you know, Brian Seltzer runs in and goes, don't listen to them. We're the truth. They're telling you lies.
That's exactly how it works.
I feel sorry for you. It's true. And I think it's funny because for years and years, right after Trump was elected, the narrative was, you know, everything was fine. People trusted the media. We had a great relationship with the public. And then old DT came along and made him hate us with all of his rhetoric about how bad the media is. It's like, well, no, you guys were already pretty terrible. And mostly politicians were willing to bend the knee to you. And then one came around who wasn't. And it opened your eyes to how unpopular you are. Because the reason most people, or at the very least many people, were cheering for Donald Trump was because you hated him and he hated you. And that meant that he was more on your side than theirs. And I just love to see their narrative crumble with each turn. You're sort of talking about how Canada is much more authoritarian than the U.S., but the fact that the people of that country have formed literally the largest convoy that we have ever been aware of in human history to protest their government's mandates is really incredible. It's a giant white pill.
There was a big convoy of diesel trucks about 1,000 years ago.
Yes, of course. No, I understand. It's a more recent phenomenon with the trucks, but also the largest convoy before this was like 5 miles.
5 miles.
And now this is 45 miles.
Donald Trump demonized and attacked the media because people hate them.
Yes.
Because people got access to the internet and it was like the knowledge was beamed down to the people. And then all of a sudden they were like, hey, wait a minute. They're lying to us about everything. And then Trump was like, that's right. Trump is a symptom of, not the creator of, but of course the media is now saying, Donald Trump, he started all of this.
In 2007, I was doing YouTube videos a lot, and I was getting real political. I was like, we need direct to the politician now. We have internet video. We don't need Secret Service. Putin and Barack Obama could get on a video chat and just talk, hang out and chill. I could get on a video chat with Barack. No security issues. We could just chat. So we need that more. And I was telling it to YouTube, and the people at YouTube corporate headquarters was listening, and they were like, yeah, let's do YouTube debates. So they created this thing, but then CNN get in on it. And they were like, no, we're going to do the CNN YouTube debates.
Really?
And we're going to water down all your questions. So I asked Barack, like, what's up with the Federal Reserve? Why do we have this system in place that's been creating interest? And I was talking about fractional reserve, and they didn't air it. They wouldn't air that. They aired all these softball questions.
Of course.
So CNN was the second guy, and he's like, no, I'm your husband.
Ian, what was his response to that?
Brock?
Yeah.
He didn't hear
it. Oh, he didn't
question.
Even hear it. Okay.
Yeah,
so you're saying CNN didn't give him the question. I thought you had an opportunity to digitally ask the questions.
Remember,
and they cut later.
Remember they did those town halls and all of the people in the town hall turned out to be Democrat operatives?
Yeah.
Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. And you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once. Then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds in stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arkseedkits.com. Promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. FastGrowingTrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
or like activists or whatever.
And I mean, who's
rigged, man?
And who's surprised by it? Even the presidential debates, when they actually have their quote unquote opposition across from them, it's just a press conference anyway. The person throws their slogans out there, and then their opponent throws their slogans out there.
Yeah, but did you hear Republicans are now going to boycott the Commission on Debates debates?
Really?
So there's probably not going to be a debate unless the Democrats come to them for a debate.
This idea of a debate also bothers me. Now we're at a place where you can pop on Skype or whatever and video chat Monday through Friday at, from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. with you, whoever you want, and everyone can watch. Come on, 21st century.
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, like shows like this one like have really, really changed the game. And like, you know, we're going to talk about Joe Rogan soon. And it's like, you know, shows like yours, shows like Rogan's, shows like Tucker Carlson's that draw all of these eyeballs because they don't bend to institutional powers in corporate media are a threat. And obviously you've been targeted with cancel culture, and obviously the cancel culture knives have come out for Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson. And the only reason for it is because instead of telling the truth, these institutional powers have now chosen that they're going to pressure corporations to censor their opposition.
Do you notice a lot of corporate interference when you're working with like just candidacy and like positioning your candidates on social media and stuff? Do you feel like pushback from corporations while you're doing it? Do you have to navigate through that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, no, because we wouldn't really work with anybody who is so beholden to corporate powers. Like, we don't, obviously we're a company of seven people, and we would never do that. And you know, what really sucks is that like there are a lot of members of Congress that I'm sure most Republicans probably like and respect a lot who take a lot of money from big tech and take a lot of money from, and part of the reason.
I think he's asking if, with the candidates you work with, are they being censored and shut down?
Oh yeah, yeah. We have to face that all the time. And so one of the clients that we work with is American Principles Project. Shout out to Terry Schilling and John Schweppe. And before we worked with them, this happened during the last election cycle, but they had their Facebook demonetized because they ran an ad in Michigan that opposed biological men in women's sports. And the way Facebook works is, in order to get a fact checker actually has to write a fact check of your thing. So some, and obviously the fact checkers are complete liars, like these PolitiFact and Snopes of the world. Yeah. But so a fact checker wrote a fact check on an ad that opposed biological men and women's sports, and they got their Facebook account demonetized for that. And so it's stuff like that that happens all the time.
It's remarkable that, I mean, we're in an amalgam of all these different dystopian novels. It's like all of these writers could see a piece, but not the whole. Because, you know, in this instance, it's very, the fact checkers are keeping us from knowing things. The major corporations are, you know, stifling free enterprise. It's like the inversion of everything. War is peace, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
No, yeah, that's absolutely true. They want to be able to dictate the public narrative. And when there's threats out there that are drawing all of the eyeballs away from them, they get scared. And because they're weak and pathetic, they go straight for censorship.
Let's carry on. We do have a lot to talk about with the great honkening, what's going to be happening in the U.S. But let's carry this conversation forward, talking about what's going on with Joe Rogan. We have this story from TimCast.com. Rumble publicly offers Joe Rogan $100 million for a 4-year censorship-free contract. Rumble posted, "Hey, Joe Rogan, we are ready to fight alongside you," saying, "How about you bring all of your shows to Rumble, both old and new, with no censorship for $100 million over 4 years? This is our chance to save the world, and yes, this is totally legit." Based on the reporting about Rumble's special purpose acquisition company, $2.1 billion valuation, and potentially $400 million in liquid cash to spend, I think they could do this, but I don't see why Joe Rogan would do this, because it would be basically him saying that he wants to say the N-word. That's the issue right now. So it's like not a good time to offer Joe Rogan $100 million for a censorship-free contract, because the issue at hand is that Joe himself, according to the Spotify CEO, is the one who took down all of the episodes last Friday. But that apology video, man, that Joe put out was a mistake. It's making everything worse. And perhaps the issue is, when people say Joe has FU money, maybe it means FU to everybody. And a lot of people who are libertarian, freedom-loving, who want honesty and integrity, assume Joe is on their side, when in reality, Joe is just Joe and just is an honest guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's doing his own thing and doesn't necessarily have a particular ideology, sort of what you're saying.
Obviously, I am offended by the lies of the mainstream press, and I'll call them out, and I stand for that. Joe is offended they lied about him and lie often, but isn't interested in getting involved in a fight to change the future of media. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's true.
Yeah.
He's not a hero. Like, don't put this guy on a pedestal. He's just a dude doing his life, man.
Which also goes to show, like, how just ridiculous the attacks against him are. Because his, like, what is his show? They're unfiltered conversations for about 3 hours at a time with people of all different opinions, political persuasions. It's not even all political. And so the fact that, you know, big institutional powers find this guy a threat who just has unfiltered conversations with people.
Yeah. Well, one thing lefties do, and I'm not exactly sure how, if this has been the case with the Joe Rogan experience, but I would be very surprised if it wasn't, because it's something you've dealt with. It's something that virtually every large political show that I'm aware of or has spoken about this has dealt with. But left-wing people will refuse to do a podcast if it's hosted too many right-wing people. And so then you only have people who are moderate or on the right doing the podcast. No lefties do it. And then lefties go, oh my gosh, why aren't we being represented? Why can't our views get out there?
Yeah, you're close. It's not that it's too many right-wing people. It's that the host has an opinion contrary to the establishment.
Yes, all right, fair enough. And so they'll go, I'm not going to go on this podcast. And so I am sure, and again, I can't say for certain, I don't know, I don't speak for Joe Rogan, but I'm sure that there's a lot of left-wing people who absolutely could do the Joe Rogan experience and let the audience know what their opinions are, but they see Joe Rogan as a non-person. He's an evil bigot, so why even engage with him or his audience?
Kyle Kalinske said that in his episode, Joe never used a slur, but he was very critical of Saudi Arabia, and Spotify has just opened up their market to Saudi Arabia. Some people said that Joe mentioned a song lyric with a slur in it. I don't know. You know, Kyle Kalinske said there was no slur in it. We also have these tweets from Adam Kokesh where he said Joe basically told him Spotify is not allowing him on the show and that they took down his show because it had too much misinformation in it. That sounds to me like, that does not sound true, to be completely honest. Like, I don't see Joe Rogan as the kind of guy to, like, call somebody up and be like, dude, I'm so sorry they took your episode down. It's because it was misinformation. Like, those are words that Joe doesn't or probably won't use. So maybe the real issue is that Joe did talk to Adam Kokesh and said something like, look, man, Spotify doesn't want, you know, these kind of shows. And there were issues with, like, the facts, that the things that were being said, they weren't true. So that, you know, they didn't want it on their platform. And then Adam frames it as such, like misinformation, uses those words, right?
Exactly.
But as I say, if that statement from Adam is true, then yeah, this is crazy. This is seriously crazy. Joe outright being like Spotify is pulling the strings.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very much he said situation. We don't
know.
Well,
Joe didn't say anything.
Yeah, well, exactly. So we have one person leveling an accusation, and we have to assume innocence until there's proof of guilt. We have to remain agnostic on this. But I would also say that, well, yeah, that doesn't sound like something Joe Rogan would do to me. I don't know him as a person, and he's also not the kind of person I would have figured as a public apology kind of guy either, so who knows. Look,
I think he views this show, his show, as like a little side project, and he wants it in a box, just like wrapped up and not stressing his life out. I saw him on Instagram, he was like, this is how I'm dealing with all the BS, and it's like they light a gorilla, piece of gorilla ice cream on fire, and they're like, and I'm on mushrooms was part of it. I was like, yeah, dude, he just wants to live, man. If it gets too much of a hassle, then it's too much of a hassle. You move on to something else. So
I think what we see from all of this is that people shouldn't assume Joe Rogan is a warrior, like you said, like fighting on your side in the culture war. He's a guy who has conversations. You happen to agree with him on a decent amount of those opinions. That's about it.
Yeah, or, he's not going to save you or back you up unless he really believes it. Sorry, Seamus.
Yeah, well, or you, you agree with some of the people he's platformed.
He did literally save us with our medical
issues.
He's
so legit. He's just such a kind person. Man, if you watch his Fear Factor stuff in the early days, he's got this innate ability to motivate and give courage. It's just such a kind, like a gentle gorilla.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, circling back though, I just want to reaffirm that. Yeah. I mean, anything anyone has said that he has said or done behind closed doors, like that we don't have any confirmation on with respect to that Kokesh situation, you have to like sort of stay on the side of we don't know and we can't jump to conclusions about it.
I want to say, you know, because I want to make sure this is in every time I bring up a video about Joe, that he's helped me out tremendously. Having me on his show helped my career tremendously. Mm-hmm. Having me on with CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, was just insane for me at the time. Cause I'm like, dude, I'm just some dude on YouTube with like 100,000 subs. Like, why am I sitting in front of the CEO of this major, biggest, you know, one of the biggest companies in the world? And so, you know, Joe had me on and he said that, you know, he thought I was a smart guy and I held my own. He appreciated it. He helped us out with our medical issues. So I think he's genuinely just like a really good dude. And I don't think he ever expected to be in this position. I think he even said that. He just wanted to hang out and talk with his friends. And all of a sudden he had this big show and it's crazy. And he just wants to chill. But I will say, I think this is it's all downhill from here.
Well, the Rumble thing I like that Chris did this, Chris Pavlovsky, because this is a big it's a big statement. It's legitimate. He will pay Joe $100 million if he does it, but it's also tells Spotify, if you mess with Joe too much, there's an exit ramp for this dude. So mess with this guy, because the world loves him.
I think it's all downhill from here in terms of what happens with the Joe Rogan Experience. As Joe stated, right? When he made this video compilation of him saying the N-words, really old. It was resurfaced by a super PAC group or something like that. His position is, my understanding, first of all, he's never used the slur. He said the slur. It's a big difference. Citing the name of certain, you know, comedy specials, referencing the word itself. But he recently came out and said, there are a lot of people that think there's no context in which a white person can say this word, and I agree with that now, and I haven't said it for years. That's the change in Joe, where he's like, okay, I'll take this stuff down. But that is a very, very important change to reference. I think, I'll say it this way. There is no context in which you will not face severe repercussions for saying the word descriptively, the N-word, right? And it becomes very difficult then when you want to reference the names of documentaries, because there's different forms of what we would call the N-word. And this is already a very difficult conversation to have, because it's hard for me to actually tell you what the words are, because if we say it, YouTube will take the show down outright. This is why I think we're having a very serious problem in our public discourse. There is no reason why a smart, honest individual can't describe a word. In fact, there are words that sound like the N-word you can't say either. A guy got canceled. He's on like Fox News and he used the word I can't say that meant shrewd, and they attacked him for it. It is absolutely insane that you have an executive at Netflix was telling people, here's a list of offensive words that should not be aired on our programs. And he got fired for telling people the word not to say. This is psychotic. When Joe says, you know, after a few years, I realized, yes, you're right. We should not be able to describe this word. I completely disagree, but it shows you the cultural defeat, because that literally makes no sense, none whatsoever. While I will absolutely acknowledge, we of course will never reference, there's I think five or six words we're talking about in a members only podcast that start with the letter N but are not the same word that you can't say for a variety of reasons. One of them I'm willing to actually say, it's Nazi. By saying that, YouTube has already probably struck the channel. We're probably downranked, demonetized, all of that stuff. Because YouTube doesn't think that content is appropriate for advertisers, so you get hurt by it. There's other words that are referenced in documentaries that are not the typical N-word, but still are considered offensive by today's standards. I can't describe that word to you or explain to you what it is. It makes it impossible to explain to people what's going on at all. For Joe to come out and be like, I agree, there's no context, I'm like, that's hardcore bending the knee to an extreme degree. Here's what I would say. There are certain contexts where you need to describe what words people shouldn't be using in derogatory context. We're not allowed to say those words because the machine by which we have this show on will ban us.
Could
outright.
You imagine if a kid...
But in the members only segment, we've had this conversation before, and we still refrain from using certain words, but we still get smeared for it anyway, trying to explain to people, we simply want them to understand context. You're not allowed. I think that's a fair way to put it. Joe actually just sided with the left's perspective that you shouldn't be allowed to describe words.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, what if your kid comes to you and is like, Daddy, why is this word so bad? And asks and says the word, and you're like, I can't talk about it. Like, could you imagine not being able to communicate with your child and explain why things are the way they are? I'm not living that life.
Well, one thing I found really funny about this story is after they canceled Joe Rogan, or tried to cancel him over this, video resurfaced to use that lovely euphemism. By the way, that means they dug it up. Somebody went looking for it and found it. But footage also resurfaced of Joe Biden saying the N-word. And we're being told that we have to look at that contextually, but this, not when Joe Rogan used it.
Well, here's the thing. None of them actually care. Like, yes. I'm pretty sure most rational people don't live under this perspective that anyone who's ever said that word, no matter the context, should be canceled, deplatformed, etc. They want to deplatform Joe Rogan, and they're going to do anything to do it. They're going to dig up anything. They'll go through any great length to cancel his show because it's a threat to the institutional power of the establishment. of many the regime.
Many people pointed out sexism is next. They're going to pull up the things he said about women. Then you're going to have homophobia. Then you're going to have transphobia. These videos all exist already. The video of Joe and the Planet of the Apes story has been around for years. It's a very, very old video. Joe apologizing, in my opinion, is him basically giving up. Like he doesn't, this is what I'm saying. He doesn't want to fight. I'm not saying he has to fight. I'm not saying I'm mad at him for not wanting to fight. I'm saying, like he said, man, he's just wanted to hang out with his friends and talk about stuff. And now here he's in this position. I shouldn't, maybe giving up is inappropriate because it implies he wanted this fight in the first place. I think Joe's stood up for himself on many occasions, like when he challenged Sanjay Gupta on CNN. This is clearly a fight he's not willing to stand up for himself on.
I think he's deflected it. He's a jiu-jitsu master. That's one way to call it. Black belt.
No, Taekwondo, right?
He's also a black belt in jiu-jitsu. Got it from really? Eddie. Yeah, from Eddie Bravo. I saw a video of it. It's on YouTube of him giving him the belt. It's real emotional. But he's also a mental jiu-jitsu artist. He knows how to maneuver energy so that it doesn't get in his way. I appreciate that about Joe.
But do you feel that's really what he's done in this situation?
It's kind of like in his, it's what he is, kind of. He's very, 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 not passive, but able to pass through things.
I literally don't understand his thinking on this one at all.
Yeah.
These people who don't watch his show, they don't like him. They're never going to like him. Apologizing will do nothing. And by apologizing, what's happened now is all of these videos are popping up of people being like, whoa, Joe Rogan admitted it. He admitted to everything. He's admitted.
Exactly.
He's gone into great detail about it. And he said he thought it was entertaining. Like, dude, the people who like you don't know, don't care. They've seen your show already. They've watched your show from the beginning. They get it. The people who don't like you, they're never going to like you.
You guys.
Also, so what is the point?
I want to point this out. There is something inherently absurd with the idea of apologizing to a group of people who are literally saying that context doesn't matter, because that means the context of your apology doesn't matter. All they see is you bending the knee, and then they want more.
This is some. Oh, were you going to say something?
No, you can go first.
Well, working at Mines, I worked with Mines for a long time, co-founded the company with Bill Ottman, the CEO, and he kept telling me, it was like 2013, 14, 15, 16, he was like, context matters. And I was like, yeah, I know, Bill, but like, and he's like, context, like talking about how to administrate the website. Context matters. A robot cannot take a piece of text out of, it makes no sense. It can, but it makes no sense ethically or constructively, you know, morally to do that. So context, but how do you teach a computer system about context?
Well, here's the thing. Like, social media is not, context doesn't exist on Twitter or on the internet or anything like this. Like, the goal of people on these platforms is just to beat you until you submit to them. And so, like, if you're anybody who gets caught in one of these situations, like, you can't bend the knee, like, 'cause they won't care. They're never gonna stop. Like, you know, Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia, did something like this over the weekend where he apologized for a tweet where his campaign account made fun of this high school kid who tweeted a viral lie about him. But like, obviously they were like, oh, this isn't a real apology. Like, you can't bend the knee to these people at all, because all they want is your career to be destroyed.
Yes.
And so you have to stand up to them.
And even if it is an authentic apology, even if they accept that it's an authentic apology, this is not a group of people that believes in forgiveness or redemption. You are always the person who did that, and they will always smear you with it.
And I do believe this is a great conversation. We talked about this before the show. Using a slur at someone and talking about a word are different.
Mm-hmm.
Different environments, different meanings. And so that sort of seems to have been lost.
Any word.
In the flow of text. Yeah, yeah. So I truly believe that talking about words that have been used as racist slurs in the past is very important for our species to evolve and move past it and make it part of us. And then, like, old words that used to be really offensive, they're not offensive anymore, a lot of those words.
Yeah. And
that's just the nature of human communication.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, so if, you know, a child uses a swear word, they drop the F-bomb, and then dad gets home from work and mom goes, Johnny said, what the F, and she drops the word. There is a world of difference between that and her husband coming home from work and she looks at him and she says, F you. Like, she's saying the F word in both contexts or in both situations, but the context is extremely different. In one situation, she is actually using it to hurt someone. And in the other situation, she's using it to either illustrate a point or to describe what someone else has said.
So necessary. And I want to bring that back to social media somehow, to culture, to common culture. Joe, like, is like the hot tip of the spear here, man. But this is a conversation that's necessary.
But like when you're on the internet, though, it's like, oh, you said this word, you shouldn't have a thing anymore. Like these things don't exist on Twitter. It's not a place for nuance.
The news outlets are all saying video of Joe using
Exactly.
The N-word.
And so even if you want to argue that there's a better euphemism to use for the word when describing it, it's clear that there is a very large difference between using it and referencing
it. Yeah, if you had like a bunch of blocks of letters that said the word and then you took a sledgehammer and smashed them, you'd be using the word, but in a, like an alliterative, artistic manner.
Is we know it, the media falsely frames things.
You're cruising down the highway, windows rolled down, tunes blasting from the radio. You're in the zone and living the dream. Suddenly, your car sputters, coughs, and throws a wrench in your whole day. Tow trucks, repair bills, the dream turns into a nightmare. Don't wait until car trouble steals your peace of mind. Visit CarShield now at carshield.com/Carlson. For nearly 20 years, CarShield has helped millions of drivers avoid the stress of major repairs. They offer plans covering up to 5,000 parts and systems, from your engine and transmission to electronics and more, all for a low monthly rate that fits your budget. CarShield plans also include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, and rental options. Get peace of mind now. Visit CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson. Join millions of customers and contact CarShield now to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Carlson. That's carshield.com/Carlson. Visit now.
We know that
all they do.
They'll twist whatever you did in any way possible to push the narrative they want. I'll tell you what I think. I think Joe's deal with Spotify, I see people chatting and they're like, they're in the chat saying, you know, he's probably got an NDA. He's probably got morality clauses about what he can and can't do, about controversies. And Spotify probably told him to apologize or whatever, and he can't talk about it. I don't know. I think Joe's probably got equity in, I think he got shares of Spotify. When you think about the biggest podcast in the world, what's the real incentive for going exclusive? There have been many outlets, many tech companies who have asked me, and they're like, you know, how about an equity deal? And I'm just like, not interested. I literally don't care about that. But I understand why someone would say it's a good deal. I mean, think about it. The Wall Street Journal reports that Joe Rogan gets $100 million. They say it's a multi-year contract. Everyone assumes this always means cash. It doesn't. So my contract with Fusion, which was the ABC News Univision joint venture, was valued at like $3 to $5 million, but direct compensation was only like $700. The rest of the stuff was like discretionary budget, staffing, hiring, but it was a big contract. So if you're trying to do a big pitch, you can be like Spotify, you know, or you could be like, you know, Disney nabs up Tim Pool with a $5 million contract or something like that. It sounds like I'm getting all this money I'm not getting. In my opinion, I don't know exactly what the specifics of Joe's deal with Spotify was, but I'd imagine they probably came to him and said, X amount of cash, X amount of shares, and maybe like a bonus or something like that. I would imagine.
And a boat for Jamie.
Like, Ian, you're having worked with Minds.
Yeah.
Like, you've worked with a lot of companies. They offer equity as incentives to sign on people and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of times what you do is you vest the equity, meaning that you sign a contract saying, I'm going to work here for this amount of time, 5 years, and every year I'll earn a portion of my percentage of equity that I would be earning in total. So for me, it was 1% of the Mind stock. Every year I would get like 0.3% or 0.2. And as long as I stayed at the company, I would keep accruing it. And if I left at any time, I'd have what I had.
So let's say that $100 million deal for Rogan was outright because, you know, he still has, he sells commercials on his show, right?
Yes. Yeah, on Spotify. He does a VOD. Is that what it's called? He says them directly.
Direct ad sales. So I'd imagine Spotify would have nothing to do with that because it's a licensing deal, right? So let's say the Spotify went to him and said, it's a multi-year contract and we'll give you $100 million in equity right now. Right now. As soon as he signs that deal, the stock jumped by what, like 20%?
Yeah.
So win-win. I don't know exactly what the specifics of their deal was, but I would imagine a good reason why Joe probably came out and apologized. He's got equity in the company.
Interesting.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with cancel culture. It has nothing to do. It's just literally like, how can I, you know, make sure this isn't going bad for everybody who's, you know, investing in this company? I think it's multi-layered, obviously. I think Joe obviously doesn't like the fact that that video exists. I think he's genuine and sincere when he was like, man, I watched that video and I'm like, I cringe watching it. You know, I wish I didn't say these things. And some of these things were crude and crass. I think he's genuine. But I think, you know, part of the motivation is, you know, got to protect his business, got to protect his assets. And I think everyone just assumes I've seen a lot of people on the left pointing this out. People on the right just assume Joe Rogan is on their side in this great culture war battle, and he just happens to agree with him on a lot of things. But Joe Rogan is just a comedian and entertainer who talks about stuff he cares about. Don't expect him to jump in the line of fire for you.
But at the same time, like, defending free speech, defending, you know, the unfiltered conversations that he has, I think it's important for our discourse. And I think it's even more important is that he gives another side of the story that very, very powerful institutions want to censor. And so the reason, you know, I think the reason, like, most people admire Joe Rogan and defend Joe Rogan, people on the right, I would say, is for those reasons. Because, like, you know, people, we believe in free speech. We believe that it's important to talk about things and not, and that censorship is for weak people. And so, like, in terms, when you, just thinking in terms of defending this idea of free speech without censorship, I think that's why people on the right defend him in the way that they've been doing.
Well, here's the next big move. We got the story from CNBC. Spotify CEO apologizes to staff for Joe Rogan controversy as episodes get removed. The CEO said that it was Joe who pulled the episodes, and they've gone on to announce that they will be investing, where is this thing, $100 million. The CEO of Spotify said they will invest $100 million for the licensing, development, and marketing of music and audio content from historically marginalized groups. I don't know exactly what that means, but I can tell you this. If Spotify takes $200 million and gives $100 to Joe Rogan and $100 to historically marginalized groups, on the surface, I could care less. More speech is better. More speech is good. The problem is, we're not getting more speech. Joe Rogan is conceding and apologizing and bending the knee and changing his positions, and the woke left is getting a massive influx of cash. So this is not more speech. It's the same old establishment talking points, and the one show, there's a reason why it's so big, Joe Rogan's show, the one show with a big enough footprint that actually moved the needle that discusses anti-establishment talking points is bending the knee, even if it's only a little bit. So we are not gaining in this. A lot of people pointed out when Joe said, I'll try my hardest to have, you know, if I have one person who's controversial, I'll have another expert following him. It's like, oh, okay. So the establishment mainstream media, which controls billions of views per month that everyone's already seen, and the one guy, the one time he gets a chance to speak out like Dr. Robert Malone on this audience, you're going to give the establishment the rebuttal when they already own the entire narrative.
I think the good...
It's not a win.
The tactic is to have them on together, Sanjay and Malone, and then the truth will come out.
Well,
and Rogan can be hold the microphone.
Some people have said, you know, all these people are absolutely right. Joe should not be platforming misinformation. Dr. Fauci should go on his show for 3 hours and explain everything in detail.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Yeah. And then in 6 months, that'll be misinformation. It'll have to take it down.
Well, that's the thing. That's what Joe literally said in the first video he made, that a lot of the stuff that Dr. Malone and McCullough talked about a year ago would get you banned for. So he's not going to stop. Then what happens is these activists resurface a really old video, a compilation of out of context clips. And Joe said he felt bad about it and he apologized for it. The issue is there's two fundamentally different worldviews. Joe is clearly of the worldview that we occupy, that there are certain contexts where describing things is okay. The other worldview claims that Joe used the slur simply by uttering its word in descriptive context. Joe does not occupy that worldview, although he's claiming now he understands it and agrees with them. Does he really agree with them, or is he scared of them? Because I'll be completely honest, I completely will openly admit, I recognize, there are conversations you can't have, you will get banned outright. Joe is coming out and saying basically that same thing. That's why I'm kind of like, oh, you know, I kind of get it, I guess.
I get it. I used mean humor when I was a kid. It was kind of a part of our friend group, and we would call each other really abusive names and like race, be racist and all this gross stuff. And then I learned somewhere in college, I went to theater school, and it was very liberal. Homosexuality was present. And I learned, like, you can't just make fun of people because of the way they are. And I stopped doing it. And man, has my life become better. I don't have crap for most part. Anything like I haven't done the racist, the hateful, not that it's hateful comedy, but I haven't made people the butt of my jokes since I was 2001 or something.
Edgy comedy was all the rave in the 90s and 2000s. And now it's just comedy is forbidden, man.
Well, I mean, it's interesting too, because especially in the late 90s, early 2000s, all of the edgy comedy was being done by left-wing people who were trying to promote a left-wing message. And on some level, I think that's why they were so successful in the culture war at that time.
I think there's a simple solution to all of this. For one, look, Joe's got a really big show, and that's why this news is getting so much attention. Everyone is talking about it. It's getting bigger. Joe's apology video made the story substantially larger. His second apology made it even larger. It's not going to go away unless or until, you know, the story is not going to stop until Joe's show is gone for whatever reason, either pulled off or he quits because, you know, they want him, the political establishment, they want him gone before the midterms. They can't have him propping, you know, these voices or anything like that. But I think none of this in the end is really going to matter. You know what matters? Infrastructure. One of the challenges we face is that we use YouTube for one of our, you know, key pieces of infrastructure, the live portion of the show. A lot of people have pointed out that we should use Rumble. It's true. The issue is Rumble is a fraction of the audience that YouTube has. And while a lot of people have said, so what? Just do Rumble anyway. I don't think people realize that I would say maybe like 70% of the people who watch this show are not super politically active people. They don't know what Rumble is. They won't watch Rumble. They'll just be confused one day as to why this show is gone. That's all they'll know. It's gone.
And I think it's against terms of service of YouTube if we run like an ad from 8 to 10 on YouTube that says come to the Rumble stream. Like they don't.
You can't do that.
It's against terms of service to tell people to go off site.
There's clever things people do where they'll stream for a minimum amount of time and then announce they're doing a stream somewhere else. But if you like, YouTube has a rule that if you announce you're streaming somewhere else and then leave, it's a bannable offense.
Yeah.
Outright ban your whole channel.
Also, you have to think about why YouTube and Google are implementing a lot of these different censorship strategies. And the reason is because left-wing activists complain to them and say things like, you're allowing this person on this platform. And often they'll say, you're allowing people to be radicalized by this specific person on this platform. Someone who's come to YouTube for reasons that are totally non-political will see a Tim Pool video or a Freedom Tunes video or a Crowder video, and they will get sucked down this deep, dark rabbit hole. Now, what the person is really saying is that other ideas are being given a voice on this platform, and I don't like that. For our response to be, you know what, then we're just going to get off their platform and give them exactly what they want is, in some ways, for us to admit defeat.
Yeah, it's like there's a big battlefield and, you know, the ranks are being flattened. So we yell, retreat.
Let's go.
Cede the battlefield.
And it's true. I mean, eventually, yeah, YouTube could ban each and every one of our channels. And I think it's important to have a contingency plan for if and when that happens. But the fact that the left wing is out there saying they're on YouTube and that's bad makes me very much want to stay on YouTube because I want to do the things that the left thinks are terrible.
So there's a couple things to say. One, this is why we have TimCast.com. So we can host, you know, conversations in our quote unquote speakeasy. But the other thing I'll say is if someone is, here's what I tell people. They're like, hey, I want to get started doing a podcast or whatever. I'm like, do it on Rumble. Don't start on YouTube. Rumble has, for new channels, in my opinion, an opportunity for growing an audience faster than YouTube does. Mm. And an opportunity for a style of content that is greatly missing in the market. I started making YouTube videos as content and censorship was getting worse and worse and worse. Here we are with a big platform and a lot of people who watch. So I think it's important to maintain. But we do post everything to Rumble as well. And for TimCast.com, we use Rumble infrastructure. If you're starting a new channel, look at Dan Bongino. Dan Bongino had 2 million subscribers on Rumble and only like 700 or 800,000 on YouTube. So if you're starting a new channel, I would say start it on Rumble. And we've talked about this too. If you want to do comedy, you can really do comedy on Rumble. The links can be shared. Then ultimately what it comes down to is it's not about Joe. It's not about any individual. It's about infrastructure. It's about the ability of individuals to freely speak without having to to worry about being banned. So in the event we ever did get banned, oh yeah, we'd immediately be on, you know, Rumble most likely. But, you know, they're not perfect either. We'd still operate much the same way. And, you know, we probably just carry on. But there'd be a lot of people who'd be genuinely confused as to what happened to the show. They, you know, YouTube will probably lose some viewership. But, man, I got to tell you, when we are sick or we have a cancellation and so the show doesn't happen, we can post about why it doesn't happen everywhere. And we still get emails from people saying, like, where's the show? I even get Facebook messages from family, like, where's the show? And I'm like, man, we literally posted on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube. Like, we posted all over the place and people don't see it.
They just turn on the TV at 8, turn it off at 10, basically.
So a lot of people tell me they turn on their TV, open the YouTube app, and then watch the show live on their TVs. And we've also seen a whole bunch of images that was really funny. I think Luke, he was browsing Amazon. You remember this?
Yeah, yeah.
He was browsing Amazon looking at TVs to buy. And one of the TVs had a product description, like photos, and the photo was us on the TV. It was really, really funny.
So meta.
So anyway, look, the point is, we're beholden to YouTube for a lot of ways, but I like to imagine that we have extended some kind of bridge from YouTube to Rumble to BitChute to Gab to Minds to any other of these other platforms where people can still communicate and share. So my advice is anyone starting new channels, Rumble is your opportunity, not YouTube.
I'm very interested in integrating Minds and Rumble. It's on the talking table right now. I've been hanging out with Chris and Bill and I'm like obsessed with this. I want to put it together. I want to bring Andrew. Come on in, buddy. I know over there, Gab, I see you. I love you, Andrew. I think integrating Gab, Minds, and Rumble and Library is so key and right there in front of us. Very excited.
Well, that's like one of the things we do is we like, you know, the candidates that we work with and a lot of the, you know, organizations we work with are, you know, the big tech censorship's a very important issue to them. And so like when we work with a candidate, we want to steer them towards, you know, when we get this new GOP majority, we actually have to do something, change laws in Congress that can prevent big tech from doing politically motivated censorship. And, you know, because of the lobbying budgets they have, that's why it's never been done. Because a lot of, you know, unfortunately, it's a lot of Republicans who take money from these companies and then laws are never changed and the censorship continues.
Is there a way to get that money out of politics?
Well, because we have the Citizens United case where corporations are considered people and they have free speech. So, you know, there are campaign finance laws, like the FEC has like laws, but, you know, there are ways around it, just as there are ways around, you know, rich people when they pay their taxes.
Yeah.
So we'd have to repeal, what was it called? Citizens United?
That's the name of the Supreme Court case, but, you know, it's a Supreme Court
case. Overturn it.
It's very tough to repeal that.
Yeah, it's a precedent. Basically allows super PACs to spend
money. It comes from way back in the 1800s, a really rich guy wanted to run for president, had all this money. He was like, why can't I use my own money on my own campaign? I want to take a train around the U.S. And they're like, he's kind of making a good point. And that was the first step of like, hey, rich guy gets to do politics a little easier. And so they start passing laws to kind of aid the wealthy after that.
Yeah, but I mean, what I think is that the GOP has changed a lot on the issue of big tech. And I think we're starting to see them get a lot more serious, you know, with on that issue. And I, you know, when we get this new GOP majority in this new midterm election, that's an issue they need to focus on.
Yeah. For sure. They talk about breaking up big tech. I don't think you can break up the corporation. That's why I talk about freeing the software code of big social networks. I wonder if it's too fascist to order the government to, but it's kind of like breaking up a monopoly.
Well, yeah. I mean, are antitrust laws fascist?
I don't think so. They're like anti-fascist.
Yeah. It depends on who you ask, I guess.
Look, I think if you're like a libertarian, I mean, I would say most libertarians would be against that sort of thing, but I would say as somebody, as a conservative, if you distrust, you know, concentrated power in the government, you should also distrust concentrated power in corporations. And I think one of the things people on the right, you know, miss today is that government today is not the only threat to our liberty. Corporations that get too big can be just as big of a threat and even more of a threat. Like, what would you say is a bigger threat to your freedom today, the government or Google?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Google.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's wild. The military concerns me, but a corporation can hire private military, basically. It can have armed security. And then if they want to flick a switch and go psycho, you're like, well, glad we have a government to protect us.
Well, let's talk about what's coming next for the U.S., right? So outside of media and big tech and all that stuff, we still have some direct action. We got the story from Rolling Stone. Republican lawmaker basically begs anti-vax truckers to blockade the Super Bowl. There's almost no chance of the blockade happening, but Rep. Wendy Rogers, part of the Law and Order GOP, is basically pining for it, saying if truckers shut down the Super Bowl, it would partially be payback for Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling.
Is that begging? Is that practically begging?
Yeah, this is the nature of media these days. Everything's hyperbole. I mean, it is what it is. But I don't know if there's actually going to be a convoy to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Other than I've seen more than just Wendy Rogers bring it up. I've seen people on Twitter and other forums actually say it would be a good idea and they'd want to do it. There's also the U.S. convoy that's supposedly forming to go to D.C. as well. So Americans are absolutely getting on board with this.
What if a convoy went over to the Olympics? Think the CCP would do anything?
How would they even get in?
Take a ferry.
The Bering Strait.
Plus, it's like the Winter Olympics, so it'd be like driving up a mountain or something.
It's still crazy to me that like after just a year where China unleashed a pandemic on the world that killed millions of people, they've cracked down on Hong Kong, they've committed a genocide, and the world responds by sending all of their athletes there to compete in the Olympics.
That's why people are gloating at all these athletes who are getting injured and screwing up. There's that one Chinese American woman who she she abandoned.
Are you talking about Eileen Gu, the skier?
No. She just like slipped on her skis or whatever.
Oh, you're talking about an injury. Okay.
No, I'm talking about that woman who fell ice skating, and she had renounced her American citizenship to skate for China instead of America.
Wait, what? I didn't see that.
Yeah,
that happened.
Yeah.
A Chinese American born woman renounced U.S. citizenship to. I think I have it. Maybe
Zhu Yi.
Because when you said that, I was thinking of.
Here we go. Yeah, Zhu Yi. Falls again, breaks down in tears at the Olympics. People are making fun of her because she gave up American citizenship, and now she's fallen twice, and people in China are mocking her and insulting her and laughing at her.
Yeah, sad.
I mean, I was thinking of the skier, who was born in America and grew up in San Francisco. Her mom was from China, and she competed for the U.S. until 2 years ago, and she switched to China and is now competing for China in the Olympics.
Is she the one who shattered her leg?
No, I don't think so. Her name's Eileen Gu.
You sure?
I believe
so. I saw something about a shattered leg.
I haven't watched like the Olympics at all for obvious reasons. So
I don't. No. Was she? I don't know. I think she was the one who lost one of her skis, but then just like slid it out and was totally fine. But there's another skier who was doing slalom, and she like slipped out, and then her leg spiraled, and she like fractured her tibia or whatever. Yeah, what's the bone down there? Is it the tibia?
The tibia is the toe bones. The fibula is the finger. I know T and F. That's how I remember.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
No. What's
are the femur? Is the
Lydia looks like she thinks he's
Lydia's the doctor.
So the femur is like that biggest bone in your leg.
He said fibia.
The fibia. I believe that's in the leg. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that's. Am I wrong about that?
But it's not toes and fingers.
I'm so sorry if I'm wrong about that. I thought tibia and fibia.
Ian, you rolled a one.
My dad told me that 30 years ago. I'm looking it up, you guys.
Femur breaks also.
The bone between your knee and your foot. That one.
That's the femur.
No,
the femur is your thigh.
Oh, between your knee and your foot.
It's your biggest bone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tibia.
Fibula?
Yeah.
That's okay,
I thought it was fibula.
Tibia, I was way off. But
maybe
she like
the arm.
Yeah. Is the arm? She like spiraled it. It was brutal, man.
The toe.
Yeah, but that is a really good point that
it's the fibula. It's different than the fibia. I guess those are different.
All of these athletes who are agreeing to this, I'm sitting back with my feet up while they're all complaining about the conditions they have to go through. Because apparently, like, communist China is unpleasant. Who would have known?
Who would have guessed?
So all these athletes are like, it's so miserable here. And I'm like, don't go. Dude, I'm sorry. People are like, but they've worked so hard their whole lives for the Olympics. And it's like, so what? There was that woman who was a chess grandmaster, refused to go to Iran because she wasn't going to wear a hijab. And I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, good for her.
She was like, screw that. I ain't doing it. And I'm like, yes.
Start a YouTube channel. Play chess online.
But these people, it shows you what they care more about. It shows you what they care more about. These people who are willing to go to China to compete, every single one of them, they care more about a piece of gold on their neck than they do about concentration camps, about potential war and conflict, about what's going on in Hong Kong. I think it's gross.
Like actors with the Emmys and the Oscars want to get that medal. Do anything, same thing, bend down and stay quiet so you get that medal.
Yeah, I mean, I was an athlete growing up, so like I understand if you're someone who's playing a sport your whole life, you know, you dream of going to the Olympics, this is your chance. I get it, you know, it's hard to give that up. It's just to make a political statement. Like I'm thinking like it's like put yourself in their shoes. Like if you're someone who's been training your entire life in this sport, the Olympics is your dream. It's hard to give that up. I don't really blame anyone for doing this. I blame, you know, America for not standing up and saying, no, we're not sending our people to China.
Why is it incumbent upon the government to stop athletes as individuals?
Well, I'm not necessarily the government. I'm talking about, like, you know, the governing body of USA Athletics.
Right. If the USA came out and boycotted the Olympics, they'd be forcing all the athletes.
Yeah,
the athletes could just choose not to go.
Yeah, that's true. But like I said, like, it's hard, like, it's really tough. Well, like, if you're an athlete like that, like, I understand that's a tough decision to make.
I just
as someone who played sports my whole life.
Sure. And I mean, I agree that it's a tough decision, but also just because it's the difficult decision doesn't mean it isn't the right one. And oftentimes it is.
I'm really confused. I don't think it's a difficult decision at all. Like,
Well, what he's saying, I don't think it's a difficult decision morally. I think it's very straightforward. I think you don't go. I think what he's saying is that they have to make a large personal sacrifice. But what I'm saying is even if you have to make a large personal sacrifice to do the right thing, you should still do it. And I do blame them for not.
Yeah, it's like how many people murdered in genocide is too much for you as an Olympic athlete? You know what I mean?
One. Exactly.
Because clearly what's happening to the Uyghur Muslims, what's happened to Hong Kong, what they're threatening over Taiwan, it's not enough for any of these people to be like, yeah, maybe I don't go into Beijing on this one. And would it be funny if even a small fraction of all of the Olympic athletes were like, hey, we're not going to compete as individuals. I'm not going to go to China. And then China would have to be like, maybe we should stop doing this to the Uyghur Muslims because we're losing out on the Olympics.
Jesse Owens, I'm thinking of 1936 Berlin Olympics, Nazi Germany. He went and performed, black guy. And like, it was like a big deal in Nazi Germany.
And he won 4 gold medals.
Yeah. And he made a global statement. And that was a big deal. So there's a chance for people to go to China and be like, yo, down with communism. But Nancy Pelosi's like, please don't do that because they're crazy over there.
I don't like the whole go and protest at the event thing. You know, I said it before. I'm just like, maybe sporting should just be sporting. And because they're banning, like they announced they banned Black Lives Matter at these events. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, maybe if people want to just go and compete and it doesn't have to be political all the time, every single time. However, I think it's also fair to then be like, you don't got to protest there, but you also don't have to go there.
You know, the Olympics have always been very neutral, even way back to Athens and the original Olympics. It was a time for all these different Athenian or all these different Greek nations to come together. Even if they were at war with each other, they agreed that they would let the athletes pass through their territory, even of countries they were at war with, to go to the Olympics. Because it was so fun. It was just like, that's the human, you know, that we play.
What do you guys think of the World Cup? So we have the World Cup coming up too in November, and it's in Qatar. and they're building,
how many corpses are in the stadium in that building?
So they had to move it. So usually it's in the summer, but they moved it to November because of how hot it gets there in the summer. And apparently, like, there are reports that they're using, like, slave labor to build the stadium.
Oh, yeah, of course, for a long time. There are reports. I could be wrong about this, so fact check me. It's been a long time since I read about this, but, like, corpses in the rubble as they're building. It's just like, oh, somebody died. Well, bury over them.
It's crazy. I mean, it just shows how, like, corrupt, you know, the international governing bodies of the Olympics and of FIFA are. That they give, like, these countries somehow got the chance to host.
You gotta understand how people are. How people are is that they've spent their whole life working towards a goal. There is nothing that will stand in their way. For these 18, 19 year old Olympic athletes who are skiing or snowboarding, they're like, yo, look, I know that China has these Uyghur Muslims, these women being raped by Han Chinese men and force impregnated. I know they're doing forced abortions and sterilization, but I want that gold medal, dude! Come on! Well, I don't care how many people they kill in those camps, right? Is that what they're saying? I think these people are disgusting.
I think it's a very sad reality, and it's been difficult to see that in many cases people only care about morality insofar as their reputation requires it. And so we're at a place where I imagine most people would spend more time criticizing atrocities of the past, like Nazi Germany or transatlantic slavery, than they would criticizing actual atrocities in the world that people won't pat them on the back so much for addressing.
Yeah, there's no sacrifice complaining about the past.
Exactly. And so, I mean, again, is there a statistical analysis done on this? No. But based on the conversations I've had, particularly with left-leaning people, I think there is currently a lot more criticism going on about Nazi Germany, which ended in the 1900s, right, late 40s, then there is criticism of communist China, which is actually engaged in genocide right now.
Did you guys see this story about Savannah Guthrie?
No.
China using Uyghur athlete in Olympic ceremony, an in-your-face response to the West. This moment is quite provocative. It's a statement from the Chinese President Xi Jinping. Dude, we are heading towards a future where there is Chinese communist authoritarianism. You mentioned there was already one athlete who defected. I guess there's apparently more than one who's defected from the United States to go perform for China. LeBron James may as well go do it. He's defended China. You've got Mark Cuban, and apparently Elon Musk is using social media. What is it, Weibo or whatever?
Oh, okay.
Weibo? Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember who we had on the show. They were talking about how Elon Musk will say all these great freedom things on Twitter, but then he's also on Chinese social media praising China.
Yeah, we talked about. Oh,
did you see this video got taken down by Twitter too? The original account that
tweeted
it got taken down.
Oh. It's been disabled in response to a report by the copyright owner.
And so the copyright owner, is that NBC in this case?
Apparently,
yeah. Like getting a video of one of their reporters.
The stories that have come out of China over what's happening to the Uyghur Muslims, I hope you guys realize it's on par with like the some of the worst atrocities we've ever heard of in the history of mankind, like forced abortions, like taking women and holding them down and forced abortions, forced sterilization, bringing men in to rape these women. These stories, some of the images and the videos that have come out are some of the most nightmarish and grotesque things we've ever seen. And Disney is producing films in these regions. And apparently none of it matters. None of it matters to any one of these big corporations. None of it matters to these. That's right. Money. Got to get paid.
Yeah. I mean, I think a big difference between, you know, atrocities between China and, you know, authoritarian countries in the past that have committed atrocities is that China, like, we've never seen the amount of financial interest that China has with the West. Like, it's incomparable to like the Soviet Union or any of these other countries. Like the influence China has over the biggest corporations in the world, the biggest corporations in America who are just drunk on their Chinese dollars. Like, that's the difference. That's why it's all about money.
Earlier you mentioned the way you were saying it was that you said the Chinese unleashed the virus on the world. I want to create some nuance because I think it's more that there was a technocratic group of scientists that did it.
Well, at least covered up would may have been a better.
But the poor people, the people of China are like suffering. I mean, I don't know. I'm not there, and I'm not a Chinese, but it looks like that they're underneath this substrat, or they're underneath this substrat of like mechanical authoritarianism or something.
I mean, I would somewhat agree with that. But what do you think they say about us?
I don't know.
Probably similar things. They criticize our censorship on social media. They criticize our police. It was really interesting. There's this meme of doctors walking down a hall, and all these superheroes are bowing to them. And I thought it was really interesting because bowing isn't really an American thing. It's more of an Asian thing. I'm wondering, where did this meme come from? And I'm not insinuating anything by it in terms of who made it. I'm just wondering, you know, why wouldn't it be clapping for like superheroes clapping?
I wonder if we evolved our bows to nods.
Well, what I mean is
much more subtle now.
That it has long been it's widely believed that China, they have something called the 50 cent armies. They propagandize on the internet. They get paid to do it. They're widely censored, but I think it's a fair assumption that part of the Cold War with China is that they're flooding our social media with divisive and divisive memes to create conflict and so division in this country. Now the advantage they have is that they've greatly censored the internet, preventing the U.S. from doing similarly. We're susceptible to it. So to imagine over in China, they're saying things like the American people think they're free, they're not. There's that hilarious propaganda video of North Korea where they're like homeless people. They starve, they have no health care and things like that, which are all technically the truth. Of course, it's way better here than it is in North Korea, but they highlight the worst of the worst and claim the worst possible things are happening. And I'd be willing to bet that for a lot of people in China, they don't know anything about Uyghur Muslims. They have no idea it's happening. So their media is all saying we're bad. Our media is saying they're bad. And here we are gearing up for some kind of conflict over Taiwan.
Well, for a lot of like Chinese college students who come to America, like, my sister knew a few at her college. They didn't know what Tiananmen Square was before they moved here. They didn't know what the Great Leap Forward was, how many people it killed before they came here. It's crazy.
Year zero, man. Pol Pot.
Tiananmen Square's nuts. That was 1993 when this happened?
Early 90s,
it was a big protest of college students and like intelligentsia came out to protest communism. And it was like, hey, we're here now. We finally, this is it. And the communist government rolled out tanks and mowed down. Yeah. Crowds of people.
The tank man pictures, like,
tries to censor it. And like on that day, they'll ban like that word from different, social sites and stuff. Like it's hard to find it on that day because you can see the CCP's trying to stop people from knowing that it happened.
Yeah.
Someone super chatted something about BLM and China. We'll read it when we get to super chats, but I just think it's going to be funny when invariably we get some celebrity or some athlete at the Olympics who like raises the red salute and then yells something for Black Lives Matter in a country that's for sterilizing minorities.
It was 1989 Tiananmen Square protests and massacre. But it's not the first thing that comes up when you search for it, even on DuckDuckGo.
It's brutal, man.
I mean, I guess it's today, Tiananmen Square hotels, you know.
But I think people might view this as pessimistic. I don't think it's so pessimistic, but I think China's going to win.
Well, how do you mean win?
They're gonna become the dominant global superpower. All the countries will become deferential to China instead of the U.S. China will expand military bases. They already are all over the planet. And then the United States will be kind of much more like Russia.
Our
cost of living will go up dramatically. You know, we'll probably bring more labor and products will be manufactured in the U.S. But life will generally get harder for most Americans. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think American gluttony is resulting in this, like, lost generation. The millennial generation are the softest of soft we've seen in a long time, and that's probably why we're, you know, the fourth turning, Strauss-Howe generational theory. It's probably why things are getting bad in the first place. These are people who don't work, don't want to work, complain about the little work they have to do, and demand the government pay them free, you know, just give them money for no reason. The money comes out of the pockets of those who actually do work. Sorry, but if you live in New York and you work for BuzzFeed, you're not actually producing anything of value to society. And for that matter, I'll be completely real and say, I know a lot of people like this show, but damn, sometimes I'm surprised that we sit around a table talking about our thoughts and feelings and we make more money than a plumber does. Plumber actually makes sure your poop goes away. That's, in many ways, the collective work of trades groups, electricians, machinists, as people noted before, substantially more value than even what we do. To be fair to us, I understand that defending, liberty, freedom, and supporting the working class who are actually making everything possible is still a good thing, and it's important to have, you know, a culture that maintains these values and ideas. But man, we sure got a whole lot of millennials who do literally nothing and complain about everything.
It's also Gen X, a lot of people. It's the gut biome, I think, has destroyed motivation. People consume too much, yeah, like saying gluttony, too much of that gunk in your gut, and you get up and it's like, I'm tired. I don't know, I'm bored. You don't understand that boredom is not supposed to happen. Hmm. Everything is so stimulating. Clear your gut and you'll see it.
Well, I mean, I think it's more of a willpower thing. People are so well fed that they don't really have to hunger, and they don't really chase things or seek out goals the way people of the past did. And Ian, I sort of hear what you're saying. I wouldn't put it exactly that way. I wouldn't say that boredom isn't supposed to happen. I would say that it's something we're supposed to allow to happen so that we can find interesting things to focus on rather than just looking at our smartphone or seeing what's on television or browsing the internet.
Boredom shouldn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. When you're calm, it's the most relaxing thing. Thoughts are an annoyance at that point.
Well, no, I mean, I think that we should allow for moments of boredom to come, because that's when creativity really starts to flourish. You start coming up with ideas on your own or figuring out things to do.
We should
define
boredom.
If every time that boredom starts to kick in, you look at your phone and start scrolling, you're never going to be productive.
I don't think you're talking about boredom. I think you're talking about listlessness or laziness or relaxation.
Boredom? Yeah, I would define boredom as when, I think almost by definition, it's when you aren't sure what to focus on or nothing is grabbing your attention. I would say boredom is when nothing is grabbing your attention. I think that's a fair way of defining it.
I'm never bored.
I have
never.
Not been
I think I think never. Sometimes I think sometimes it's good to allow yourself to be in a situation where you're not sure what to focus on, because that means you're not looking at all of the traditional things that are grasping for your attention at all times, and you're trying to find something deeper.
You could be in a position where you're not focusing on anything but not be bored. Is a point I would like to make.
Mm.
It's like
boredom, in my opinion, is a result of it's luxury based stagnation. It's that we live in such luxury that people can sit there and be like, I have literally nothing to do. Well, if you have a mission, if you have drive and you have purpose, you literally will never experience that. But for so many people, they have no purpose. Boredom arises. What do I do now? I got off work. I have money for my bills. My rent is paid. What do I do?
Consume. Boredom. Yeah. Put something in my stomach and then not have to create something because I'm busy digesting.
Yeah. I have downtime. Downtime is like, man, I'm exhausted. You know, so here's what I did today. I woke up immediately, got to work, finished work around 2, immediately skated for 2 hours, ate food, and then sat for about an hour or so to try and just like rest. Not boredom, exhaustion. Then I get cleaned up to come on the show, and here we are on the show once again. We're going to finish a show, and then I'm going to go to bed. Then I'm going to wake up and do it all over again. On the weekends, it's relaxation, not boredom. It's like, woo, I need to chill. Mm-hmm. Wow, man, I am wiped out.
Yeah, I guess maybe we're defining the term differently, or maybe we disagree, but I think a little bit of boredom every now and again is healthy.
I bet we're slightly defining it differently.
Yeah, that could be possible.
Boredom, to me, is usually when someone, like you said, I don't know what to do, and you're sitting there confused.
You're
like,
not sure
what
to focus on. Yeah, or the things that you should be doing are not immediately obvious to you. And I think so often when people get that first dose of boredom, their instinct is to run to some form of entertainment. I want to look at my phone. I want to look at my computer. I want to see what's on television, instead of sitting there and going, why don't I imagine a story? Why don't I start picking at a guitar? Why don't I learn an instrument or a hobby or something along those lines?
You see, that's for someone like me. I've been bored before to a certain degree, but for the most part, I probably experienced substantially left boredom. And I think that's something you get when you're a kid. I think it's something you know, if you grow up with no purpose and no meaning, mm-hmm. you're probably going to find yourself bored very, very often, unsure of what to do with yourself. For me, it was too much to do all the time. I played music. I skateboarded. I was constantly reading the news. I was constantly learning. I used to do flash animations. I used to make websites. I was always just trying to do something, understand something, or solve something.
What was your diet like? Did you guys eat a lot of sugar growing up?
I ate a lot of candy.
But yeah. was it allowed? Do you have soda in the house?
Did we? Yeah. Yeah, we had Fresca.
Oh.
And then we had Royal Crown Cola.
Oh, that was RC, way better than Pepsi.
Of course,
Coke.
It's the best. You know what I mean? Royal Clown.
We had sugar kind of banned.
Royal Clown World, yeah.
It was kind of banned from our house. My mom wouldn't let us have soda in the house. So at the time, I hated it because I always wanted sugar. And I'd go to the drug mart and get sugar and lemon heads and, Spree and all this. But not having it in my diet helped me in later life.
I used to make video games on back in the day. I would do some flash programming. I would do some there was a thing called Click and Play used to exist, then Games Factory, and then Multimedia Fusion. I used those. But then, so when I wasn't doing that, I was playing Magic the Gathering. I was playing Pokemon. I was skateboarding. So I was literally always doing something. Just like there was never a period of where I wasn't doing anything. We weren't well off by any means. My skateboard was always like you would get worn down, and then I'd be riding a crusty board for a while. And then I didn't have the best cards ever, so it became really hard to be competitive in any of these things like Magic or whatever. But I was always doing something. There was always somewhere to be. And then if I wasn't doing any of those things, there was like just people to hang out with, to talk about, and so we were always off on adventures. I gotta say, I think skateboarding is one of the most powerful things you can do for a kid. Because when I first started skating, first of all, it gives you drive and direction. You've got something to accomplish. It's tangible. It's in front of you. You know how to do it. You've seen people do it. Now you need to accomplish it. You get it. What's the next step? Then what happens is there's fears to overcome. Dropping in on a half pipe is scary, but you have to do it, and you're going to fall the first time. Not everybody, but 95% chance you're going to fall and get hurt, and you have to if you want to overcome that hurdle. Then the other thing that skateboarding does is we started exploring. Me and all my friends would travel around going to different neighborhoods trying to find new places to skate, meeting new people, expanding our reach throughout the city. And then eventually I went to other cities and suburbs and other states and then traveled around the country.
Outside adventure. That's a big part of it, being in nature. Yeah. I think Andrew Huberman, he's a neuroscientist, was saying every human should at least for 15 minutes a day gaze into the horizon. It does something to the brain. He explains it way better than I do, but I suggest checking out Andrew Huberman. He's a genius. He has a great podcast on YouTube. Outdoor activity and also hanging from branches apparently is very good for your balance, according to Ben Stewart.
I know that it's such a boomer thing to say, but the only reason it's a boomer thing to say is because every generation before them said it, and it's like one of the wise things they actually retained, but kids just don't spend enough time outside anymore. Yeah. And it's sad because what you're talking about, going out and exploring with your friends, I did similar things, and we were fortunate because our parents didn't really want us to have game systems. We didn't get them till we were a bit older. We didn't have cable in our house, so we pretty much had to go outside and find things to do. I knew so many kids in my generation, and especially in the generation a little bit after me, where the kids kind of didn't really develop a personality because all they were doing was focusing on electronics. And I'm not saying that you can't develop skills or some personality with electronics either. You know, like you said, you can learn to code. You can learn to build computers. That's all really productive. But it's just sad that this sense of exploration has been lost because so many kids will just find it in their video game system or nowadays in their smartphone.
Well, something that was, I think, really good for me growing up is I was an athlete. I think sports are a really important thing that you can do for a kid. It teaches teamwork. You know, you're working towards a goal of winning with a bunch of people. You meet friends that way. Like, so for me, that was something that I think really helped me. It also teaches you a lot of values of hard work, working hard to get to the highest level in your sport. And I think, you know, I think the world would be a better place if we had a lot of athletes.
Well, yeah. I think that's interesting. And one more thing I want to point out here, which is different between the time, and I know we're not all the same age, but the times, respectively, that we were all raised in and how kids are being raised now, is even though we did have all sorts of, you know, distracting electronic gadgets, at least when you were outside, you were outside. Now with these smartphones, they're constantly online, even when they're outdoors. It's a very unhealthy thing. Like, they don't get to take a break from that technological infrastructure the way we could when we were kids. You could just kind of go out into the woods or go into the forest or go to your local pond with your siblings and really be in nature. And that's not possible anymore because they always have everything at their fingertips.
I wonder if the Wi-Fi is agitating people too. That might have something.
The countries in this upcoming civil war, the barriers, the borders, they're digital. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, Bill Maher was like, you know, we can't have a civil war because the Mason-Dixon line would go through Nana's kitchen. Mm-hmm. So, well, sure, people are now polarizing based on the ideology they hold based on digital boundaries. So there are bubbles on Twitter. There's a left bubble and a right bubble, and you can actually map it out. There's been these really great visualizations showing how they clash and then spread out, and you have like the right, which is mostly the far right's all like destroyed and banned. Mm-hmm. So you have like this big clump of like center right, and then you have this huge splash of far left. Those are the borders of the upcoming or the current cold civil war, civil war, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I find that fascinating because there is an old George Bernard Shaw quote. He said, "The class warfare of the future will be fought between competing intellectual classes for the souls of our children."
That's great. When did he make that quote? Do you have any idea?
I'm not sure.
That's awesome. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
No, there you go, man.
When you were talking about sports and how great they are, I had an experience where when I was a kid in fifth grade, I used to play sports, soccer and baseball. And then my mom put me in baseball in fifth grade, but which they didn't do. I was like, can I go practice batting cage? And we don't have the money. Sorry. So I couldn't practice. And so putting a kid in sport, but not putting them in a place to practice the sport was very embarrassing for me because I didn't know how to play baseball. And I was the worst kid on the team and my friends turned their backs on me. So it was really ostracizing.
Well, that's the thing about skateboarding is that skate parks are typically free up into the public and there's tons of people there to hang out with.
Yeah, it's more of a free, easy to practice sport.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. Like, it's not obviously if your kid doesn't like it or, you know, he doesn't enjoy it, then it's not.
I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Just a shout out to all you parents out there. If you're going to put your kids in sports, make sure you get them training. Put them in training as well. It's just as important as the performance.
Yeah.
All right, let's read Super Chats. If you haven't already, smash that like button. One like is one honk. Go to timcast.com, become a member. We're going to have a members-only segment coming up for you around 11 or so p.m. Don't want to miss those. And I think I said, subscribe to this channel. So, all right, let's read some more. All right, I can't read the name of the first Super Chatter because YouTube blocks it off for some reason. But they said, the blockade at our legislative building in Regina, Saskatchewan, I was not there, but last night, a crazy amount of police cleared them out. I'm yet to go by today. How sad. Crazy. Christopher Chapman says, I love big honkers, but seriously, how can you ban honking? Screw these monsters. Time for a Canadian revolution. Well, the people of Canada are standing up for themselves, and nonviolent civil disobedience is working beautifully.
I just refreshed Twitter, and the first tweet is honk.
Alien scientist. Which tweet is it?
Alien scientist.
Oh,
Jeremy Riss, yeah.
Right on.
Honk. Just a honk.
Honk. The cure for a clown world was honking? That's so ridiculous.
Who
knew?
Who would have thought that honking could bring so many people together?
Yeah, man. Happy Canuck says, in Ontario, honking at random was already illegal to do. It is in the Traffic Act and counts as aggressive driving. In Chicago, it's improper use of horn. So if you just honk randomly, they can give you a ticket for it, I guess. William Leverett says, the trucker protest is safe and effective. Well, all right then. Atherin says, I want to give a shout out to Otto Walks on YouTube. He is a walking live streamer who has become even more popular during the honkening. He crossed paths with Viva Fry today as well. Viva's great. And shout out to Otto Walks.
Do you guys know any other good streamers that are up there covering?
We are
all the Rebel News guys, for sure. The Rebel News guys have done the best job.
There are a bunch of hot dogs in the chat where people are posting hot dogs and then saying Portland Andy. Is he what's
he's not
the
there. He's just live streaming.
He's not.
Oh, Portland Andy.
He's not where?
He's not in Ottawa. He's just live streaming the coverage, I think. He's not in Ottawa. He's just live streaming the coverage.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he's not on the ground.
Yeah.
Oh. So who's he like? He's like picking up other people's streams or something?
I don't know.
Kind of Rikita-lawing it.
Rikita-lawing
it.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Ethan says, Ian, you rolled a one when you were doing your introduction, but here is a 20 for spiritual mind drugs because I love you.
Thank you so much.
Archie Magira says the Canadian goose is my favorite Pokemon.
Uh-huh. Well, there you go.
I want a shirt of that goose. Oh, was it Mesa Boot and Honka Boot and Fine Boot? I got to get that shirt.
Yeah.
No, it's a sticker.
I want a shirt of it.
Honka Boot.
I'll wear it. Jessica, you hear me? I'll wear it.
I think it says Honka Boot.
Honka Boot and Fine Doot.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm a genius.
Michael says, I am an OTR driver and trainer. Most company drivers like myself can't get to the protest. Really wish you can get an active driver to come on. Lots of the public doesn't get it. Blow the train horns. All right. Cyrus says, they can shut down tens of thousands of protesters, but they can't shut down millions. Stand up for your rights because no one else will. Keep up the good work, fellas and lady. Definitely. Oh, here we go. P. Deitel says, flashing your headlights, warn of cops ahead, is protected by the First Amendment.
Oh.
That's interesting.
But is it a civil offense then or something?
Flashing your headlights?
Yeah, because I've heard people could get pulled over for that. Maybe because it's supposedly it's disrupting traffic. Maybe that's why they pulled over.
I don't know, man. The dangerous thing about a cop trying to claim your honking was improper or whatever, it's like, how do they prove
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
With a radar detector, with a radar gun, they can be like, you were going 7 miles an hour over the limit. That's a speeding ticket. And then you go to court and he's like, here's the readout, Your Honor. It's like, he was speeding. And then, you know, now they have dash cams and all that stuff. But if they were like, he used his horn improperly, I'd be like, oh, there was a fox.
Also, how can they just
scare it out of the way, but I want to hit it?
It's like, unless they have footage, they can't even prove that you honked at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess if they're wearing body cameras.
Yeah.
People are saying now that apparently they're going to go around with empty gas cans all over the place so that the cops are forced to stop everybody,
Whoa.
But they don't have anything.
Brilliant. They always find a way, man. It's like the plants growing up out of the concrete.
Yep.
It's like, you remember, I forget what European country this happened in, but there was like some European like city that banned fireworks. And there was like this video that went really viral on Twitter of just like millions of fireworks going into the air in the city.
Oh, yeah. LA, I think, banned fireworks on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And then people were flying in. There were fireworks everywhere.
There were
Nobody
so
cared.
Many last time I was there.
This is what you need to understand. They want to convince you that the small fringe minority of 8% is the 90%. But I'll tell you this. They're saying the same thing about the truckers, that they're a fringe minority. Yeah, that's the biggest trucker convoy the world has ever seen. And when you see them ban fireworks and then a plane is coming in and everyone's lighting them off, yo, you are with the majority. The government is lying to you. Mm-hmm. Unrealized Potential says, silence is violence, Ian. The honk is the way.
Oh, I like you.
Raymond Loera says, bring back the soccer vuvuzelas. Remember those vuvuzelas? Mm-mm. They're the big horns and they're like, brrr, and everybody was blowing them all the time.
I gotta look it up.
Yeah, vuvuzela.
Those got banned from everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. People were blowing those horns. Murph says, Ian, the trucker's mega horn comment totally made me think of the Power Rangers vehicles. Honk, honk.
Yeah, it's like Burning Man, too. You start to hear 10,000 radios all blasting at once. It becomes one song.
Jeez.
All right, let's see what we got. Patricia says, can they be prosecuted if they record honking and play it on a loudspeaker? Mm-hmm. Not honking, right? I mean, that's really interesting. What if someone just writes a song that has a bunch of honking in it? And the song is just really, really low, but the honking is really, really loud.
In the U.S., you need a permit to use a megaphone or audio, any kind of electrical audio equipment in New York. I don't know about Canadian law.
Interesting.
Rilo says, like it or not, everyone is in this fight over freedom. Rogan knew the rules, took a side, and capitulated where folks with less security put everything on the line and stood strong. Your friend is a coward. You know what, man? I won't look at it like so black and white. I can only just say if you're watching this show and you think we do a good job, you can thank Joe Rogan for helping make this possible. And that's the important thing. If Joe decides that he's tired and he's, you know, he doesn't want to be involved in this, he's done so much good for everybody.
Yeah.
Outside of literally helping us heal from sickness, helping, you know, having me on his show. I understand me going on a show was good for him too. You know, we have guests come on the show. It's good for us. It's good for everybody. But I think he's done so much good. Like, I'll put it this way. Out of 100 good that Joe Rogan has done, there's, like, in my view, like, two bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not going to be mad at the guy. He's earned so much goodwill and credit for me. You know?
It sort of strikes me like how sometimes they'll come up and you'll say, is it worth sacrificing 99% of the things you can say so you can say that one thing that's going to get you banned? And it's kind of like Joe. He's like, I'm not going to
worry about this one thing. It's not, I'm just putting it away because this other.
But that's admittedly a defeat.
Maybe, you know what I mean? Sometimes retreat is the best option.
Well, so that's the way I describe it. I'm like, you know, I tell people here, I've said it on the show, if there's 100 things I want to say, one of them will get us banned. We'll say the 99 things and then put the one thing on the website for everyone to see, or we'll put it up on the podcast platforms on Sundays or whatever to try and make sure we're doing something to get it out. We do have a paywall for member content because the website costs money. It costs money every time someone watches a video when we're trying to grow the operation and do all that stuff. That's just, you know, business. But it's also me basically saying we have taken from our heap of sand but one grain and handed it to the other side. And that means if everyone keeps doing that, they eventually win. It's not a winning scenario. It's admitting defeat and explaining why we did. So I'm not happy about it. But
well, retreat is different than defeat. You can retreat and then win.
We've ceded certain territories for the sake of trying to maintain the center. And it's so sometimes you sacrifice a piece in chess to try and gain the upper hand, and it works. But it's not easy. So in this instance, I say the same thing of Joe. I'm not a fan of his. I think the apology will backfire. I think it is backfiring. I think it's bad for him across the board. It's not, you know, he can do whatever he wants. You know, I think it was a mistake. I think it's a mistake as an apology. I think it's a mistake culturally. I think it's a mistake for the benefit of his business. I just don't see any scenario in which apologizing will do anything for him. Mm-hmm. If he's upset that he has friends like Dave Chappelle and, you know, they don't like the fact that he said this word or whatever, he can say it to them. But doing the public statement only makes more people hate him.
Interesting.
Like it makes it worse.
So it's like he got a little bit of taint and now he's going in the water, and if he puts it out there, it's going to spread out to a bunch of other stuff.
I'll put it this way. You are standing on a big stage and there is 11 million people all watching you and staring at you on the microphone. And then someone right in front of the stage is holding up a video of you doing awful things. So you look at it, take the microphone and go, hey, there's a video right here to everybody who can hear me of me doing really awful things. I'm sorry I did it. And then everyone in the audience is like, whoa, we didn't know you did that. So that's the issue with, like, the main issue with doing blanket apologies. Joe's voice is louder than the activists who are smearing him. Joe amplified their voice with his own, multiplying the negative impact. That's, you know,
hey man, we're living in social science, right? We're doing social science as we live. I love this.
I think, you know, I think Joe's probably not even paying attention to a lot of the stuff.
I hope not. Just cool your mind, bud.
Yeah. I think he's just doing his thing. I wish him all the best, man. And I feel bad that there's so much conversation around him that we keep talking about him because I'm sure it's annoying. But he's got the biggest podcast in the world and one of the biggest shows in history. So it's like, geez, got to talk about it, you know?
For sure.
Influencing everything. Kaysen Womble says, Seamus, your argument on abortion, your vid on Freedom Tunes changed my stance from choice to life. And Tim, if companies will turn over private texts, what could Amazon do with Alexas if they record? We got one over there. Is it yelling at me now? They do record. They're recording all the time. Yeah. I believe. So in order for a device to be activated by voice, the microphone has to be on. Now you understand.
Thank you.
Yeah. Also, I want to take a moment to respond to that. First of all, thank you for that super chat. I very much appreciate that. I've done a few videos on abortion. I'm glad that one of them reached you and that you changed your position and are now fighting for the unborn. I mean, hearing that kind of thing really, really makes this worth it. So genuinely from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
Do you know what the video is?
I've done a couple on abortion.
It's probably the recent one.
It's probably the most recent one.
Where the leftist is calling the baby a parasite, but he's refusing to get a job.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. That was probably, it could have been that one. Well, either way, thank you so much. Again, massively appreciated.
All right. Lucas Parada says, freedom protesters were arrested for bringing fuel to the truckers. So today, most protesters started carrying around empty gas cans. They are genius. That is very, very clever.
That's very cool.
Yep. Nathan Brubaker says, CBC receives $1.5 billion in taxpayer dollars from the liberals in Canada. Comparisons can be made to North Korea's government monopoly on media. Yep. That's government-funded media for you. Roberto says, word on the internet, 4chan already figured out where Trudeau is. Huh. Where's that?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Trash Panda says, honk honk, two Canadian boogaloo, we're not your buddy, guy. Oh, honk honk, two Canadian boogaloo. I get it.
Indeed not.
All right. Bredo says, if kicked out, truckers should simply stop delivering to Ottawa. We can fund their living on Give, Send, Go. Yay or nay, what other option is there?
That's what I said.
Well, 50,000 truckers. How many truckers are there?
100,000? I don't know.
In like the Canada or in total?
In Canada. I don't know. How many truckers work in like Canada?
100. Let me look it up.
500?
100,000.
100,000? Half of them are protesting?
Jeez.
SASP says Ambassador Bridge between Detroit and Canada has been taken over by protesters.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I saw that.
I just saw a number that in 2018 there were 312,000 truck drivers in Canada, up from 55,000 in the year 18 years earlier. So from 55 to 312 in 18 years. Hmm. That's up to 2018.
Jeff Mark says, Tim, did you see Dave Portnoy take down the PAC members behind the Joe Rogan video last night? It's all about a power display and creating value as the most powerful left-wing character assassins. I saw that he had posted it. Dave Portnoy is a rad dude as far as I'm concerned, and he's suing the media for smearing him. I think he's fantastic. And big fan of Barstool Sports. Just because they opened that new Barstool Sports book and they have like good chicken wings over at the casino.
Oh, nice.
It's really awesome. There's like a gigantic 20-foot screen.
It'd be fun to get Dave over here and go to the casino and do a Barstool thing.
That would be super rad. It would be super rad to have Dave come out. But he's a super famous busy guy with so much going on.
It's so hilarious and wild to me that Insider told one of their reporters to spend 8 months interviewing every single woman that Dave Portnoy has ever had sex with. Yeah. Imagine having to do that. You have to track down every woman that a guy's ever had sex with. Right. You find three or four, I remember how many it was, who didn't even enjoy it, but he didn't do anything wrong, and then put it under a byline that suggests he's a sexual predator.
Why, you know, could like, you imagine?
Are there other stories that could take much of your time other than this? Like, what the heck?
And Portnoy's basically debunked it all.
Oh,
He's published the messages, be like, look at them, they're begging. Like, I gotta be honest, literally, they are.
Yeah.
There's messages where they're like, I want, you know what I'm saying?
And they've put all these stories behind paywalls.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
So you buy it to read it and then go, oh, that was stupid. But he's suing him. Good for him, man.
Yeah.
You know, he said a lot of people have said, like, why do it? And he was like, look, they've released these stories right before the earnings calls for Penn Gaming. Like, they're trying. You know what, man? I would not be surprised. Let's just separate ourselves from that conversation and just say they're probably news organizations that will put, you know, options or something, put options on stock or short a stock. Publish a negative story.
Oh, wow.
And then profit.
Brilliant.
Yep.
So you know, it's like federally. In 1908, they would have been trashed. A company would have been ripped to shreds for doing something like that 150 years ago.
Isn't there that famous story that, like, after the Napoleonic Wars or something, that message, the guy, like, rode on a horseback to England with a message that Napoleon had lost? But then they claimed that Napoleon won, so the stock collapsed.
It was in England. Yeah, I heard that story. I'd have to pull up the exacts. Yeah, I heard that.
Like, this has been happening for a long time, bro. Like, they spread the word that Napoleon won, so everyone was selling off everything like crazy. Rich people bought it up for super cheap, and then the actual word got out Napoleon lost, and then everything skyrocketed in value.
I'll see if I can find it.
I was reading something about that. I don't know what that, I don't know if that's true or not, or just, you know,
that sounds like something that would happen.
Maybe. Yeah, it'd be super rad to have Dave Portnoy on. I don't know if he's too busy. But, you know, as this show gets bigger, we're getting more and more, interest from more and more famous people.
Yeah,
so that's a cool
thing.
That's why I'm here.
I mean, it was really hard to book Seamus.
Like a magnet.
Freedom Tunes over here.
Yeah. Joe says, Joe Rogan, Rumble, my Dwack stonks is gonna moon. But I don't think Rumble is Dwack. It's, that other thing. What is it? CVI or something? Yeah. CLVI or something like that.
Dwack is Trump's one, right?
Yeah. Gat Perry says, just finished Rogan's episode with Jordan Peterson. It's crazy how JBP almost foreshadows what was about to happen to Joe, hoping Joe ends up following the advice Peterson gave him. Certainly. Certainly, certainly. Zero Safar says, Ian, these people chose to live in the capital where protests will happen. Would you feel bad for people that chose to make a home next to an active volcano, then complain that there is lava that makes their life
That's
hard?
That's a very good point. I was watching video of a simulation of what it would have been like in what's that volcano?
Pompeii.
In Pompeii, the day of the eruption, and you can just watch it. And it's on YouTube actually. There's like a long 20-minute simulation of like a day in Pompeii when it goes.
Did they all instantly die from the pyroclastic flow?
Not all of them. It started the heat. The singeing smoke came down and started to coat and burn everyone. But one guy, like, I think it was Pliny the Elder had left the city, but he came back by boat to rescue his family. And when he got back to the city, he got killed by the volcano.
So they mostly didn't get swept up in lava, wasn't it? It was pyroclastic
covered
flow.
By ash. Oh,
yeah, it's the shockwave of hot gases that spray out and sweep and then hit you, and then you can't breathe, and then you burn and then die.
Oh man,
I think that's what it was.
What a city! I had my parents got to visit. I want to go there someday.
Remember when that exhibition. So wasn't there like a volcano eruption in New Zealand or something? Yeah, and a bunch of people got like vaporized or some crazy whatever.
No. Oh, I found some of this info on the Napoleonic defeat. British in Paris after defeat of Napoleon. It's 1815. I'm not going to go into it too long right now, but if you guys want to look it up, history of banking, 1815, Napoleon, I think you'll find it there.
Oh, but what and happened? Then,
well, I got to read more. Let me tell you about it tomorrow.
All right. Legendary Aces, have you ever seen Psycho Pass? It's an anime in a dystopia where your latent criminality is tracked by your thoughts and actions. If you're deemed a criminal, enforcers will be sent after you. Yikes. It's a Minority Report. Good movie, too.
Yeah.
Well, it was a Philip K. Dick short story, wasn't it?
I remember.
The prequel.
I don't know.
They can arrest you for a crime you did not yet commit.
Exciting. It's the future.
The Narcoleptic Rant says, Timcast is my birthday, and I released a song y'all might like. The Bear Shelves Biden Blues. Keep it the great work. Right on. So I played that Will of the People game, itch.io, Will of the People. Someone mentioned that they'd made the game. It's actually really clever. It's pretty good. It's there are three factions, and you're trying to propagandize and manipulate people into gaining power. And then when you finally gain power, the wheel rotates, and then your faction takes over. And then you can do marches and, like, you know, propagandize and stuff. So you're, like, trying to figure out how to get the highest score.
All right, I'm gonna tell you about this Napoleon thing. Get it out of the way. For as long, this is it's called the Napoleon is Dead, the Great Stock Exchange Fraud of 1814. And then this is from thehistorypress.co.uk. For as long as they've existed, stock markets have attracted fraudsters. Early stock exchange scam involving one of the great seamen of the age, Lord Cochrane, is a powerful and fascinating tale of greed, deceit, and public humiliation. In February 1814, news arrived in Dover that the French had been defeated and Napoleon killed. By the time the London Stock Exchange opened, the city was full of rumors of a great Allied victory. The price of government bonds rose so rapidly, and a syndicate of speculators took the opportunity to offload its recent acquired holdings at highly favorable prices.
But this was before he was defeated, or?
They spread a rumor that he'd been defeated and killed.
Oh, okay.
And all the value started to go up, and then they sold off.
Yep, and then he'd actually won.
And they found out he's alive, and all the prices dropped back down, but they were already sold out.
So it was the opposite of what I was saying. And then he eventually decided to invade Russia in the winter, and, you know, we know how that works out for people.
Yeah, don't do that.
I like this meme. People are like, there's a war about to break out with Ukraine and Russia, and the U.S. is sending soldiers, and someone tweeted, is Russia good at winter war? It's like, ha, 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 ha.
I saw a really great tweet from his name's Orrin McIntyre. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he tweeted, after failing in Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires, the ruling class has turned their attention to fighting a war in Russia in the winter.
Yeah. It's a great plan. You know,
brilliant.
Rilo says, Rogan most definitely took a side against cancel culture. He laid it all out when he had Alex Jones on his show. You're biased because he helped you. I'm confused by what that means, though. Like, you're saying he opposes cancel culture. I've seen clips of Joe, and I've seen enough of his show to think that he understands apologizing doesn't work, and I think he's even talked about it before. So, I don't know. I don't think how my bias, because Joe helped me, would make me critical of him. Like, the bias would make me be like, Joe can do no wrong. But I wouldn't say that of anybody.
We all have the demon within us.
Mick Chilla says, if Joe thinks he's protecting his show by censoring himself, he's delusional. His fan base will drop quicker than FB stock if he continues to bend the knee to the establishment. I'm gonna say this. You know, I think back to when I was just in my living room in the Philadelphia suburbs. I had two YouTube channels. It was before I went on Joe's show. I had 180,000 subs. I was making good money. I was making a good amount of money on my own, just doing, like, you know, three videos or four videos per day. I was, like, reading the news in the morning. I would be done by about 3 p.m. and I'd have the rest of the day to do my thing. And, you know, we'd go out to get pizza and we'd hang out, skate in the back, and then play Magic the Gathering. And then I was like, let's do more work. Let's do a lot more work. And now all of a sudden we have this show, which is way bigger than I ever thought it was going to be. This show is way bigger than my main channel, which went from, you know, it's 10 times bigger than it was before. So now this show has grown so large, we're getting swatted, we're getting DDoSed, we have all of this crazy business expansion, we have employees, and I'm just like, I wonder if Joe is just sitting there thinking like, dude, I just want to smoke weed with my friends and talk about aliens. Like, this is
crazy. He does that anyway, yeah.
But it's just like at a certain point, he might just be saying, what is going on? Like, why I never wanted to do this?
You should have him on your show and interview him. He just hasn't done a lot of interviews lately. It'd be a good interview.
He's too busy, man. Come on.
Maybe now's the time.
He popped in when we were in Austin, but yeah. You know, he's a busy guy. So, you know, man, part of me thinks there's a lot of philosophy. A lot of people say more money, more problems. A lot of people, you know, say like money won't make you happy and stuff like that. There's a fine balance between being a psychotic workaholic, you know, like me, and then kind of just accepting when you have a good salary and just having time to, you know, play card games with your friends and work on side projects and just chill. And then I've just been like, literally, I feel like if I can't, it's painful for me to stop moving.
You'd be a good dad.
It is painful for me to stop working.
Good, because kids need your constant attention.
Yeah, I guess, man. But I look
sub constant.
Like Joe Rogan, he could stop at any time. And like, why isn't he? There's a reason why he's so rich and successful is because he can't. He can't stop. He's got to keep going. He's got to keep making it happen. I wonder if at a certain point everybody reaches that retirement age where they're just like, I'm done. You know, I've fought the battle, and now it's time to just chill and go fishing and raise my kids and play some music.
Yeah, like the Stones are still touring. That's pretty badass. I don't know.
Yeah, man.
I guess what do you call retiring? Well, what you love?
Well, Mick Jagger also, like, a couple years ago had a baby with a 29-year-old at the age of, like, 70, however old he is now.
Whoa.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood did that, too, I think. Maybe not 29-year-old. I'm not sure. He has young kids.
Oh, this is interesting. Derek Curtis says, J.P. Sears and Zion just offered Joe Rogan $100 million in Bitcoin to join them. Do they have $100 million in Bitcoin?
Sweet. Depends on where the market's at, I guess. They're just, hoping it goes back up.
Here's the crazy thing. If you told me J.P. Sears was worth $70 million because he had Bitcoin, I'd be like, wow. I know a lot of people who bought a bunch of Bitcoin when it was worth nothing.
Yeah. I know.
And it's like 10 years later, they're billionaires.
Yeah, the money is out of control. If you really understood how billionaire-y people got, it's
billionaire.
Before it was even taxed.
My story is that I wanted to buy 7,500 Bitcoin in 2011. And my friend told me not to do it because it was like worthless. You couldn't do anything with it. And I was like, yeah, sure, fine. You know, you're probably right. And then when it hit $5, I was like, no, because like it went from 70 cents to $5.
Yeah,
I can't get in anymore. I lost
7,000. It was like 7,333 Bitcoin or something like that. Imagine if I had that much Bitcoin.
I actually thought when Ethereum was $10 that I'd missed the boat and it was too expensive to get $10. I didn't realize at the time the incremental purchase power. It's just more about the percentage of the increase and how much of a percentage of your wealth you put into it.
When Ethereum was at $100, I was like, damn, missed that one. But then I had this revelation. I was just sitting there and I was like, every single time I say to myself that Bitcoin's too expensive, I realize I was an idiot and it's going to keep getting more and more valuable. So then when Bitcoin was at like 1,000, I bought a bunch. But a bunch is like literally like a bunch, like a small bundle that you could hold in your hands, like not that much. Mm-hmm. And so I got a good amount of crypto for sure, you know, but I wish I bought in 2011.
No, dude, I know. And I was like this is back in my libertarian era and so many of my fans were all into Bitcoin. Like I am absolutely one of the people who should have known, but I was like, nah, it's going to crash. Like I just didn't know anything about it.
But you know, the craziest thing is the people I know who became ultra wealthy off it are some of the dumbest people I've ever met. Because the issue was when I was having conversations with my friends about Bitcoin, we were talking about the potential pitfalls. There's a, like hard forking was a problem. Hard forking. I'm sorry, not hard forking. But forking in general, when there have been a few instances where Bitcoin accidentally by error split into two different Bitcoins. And then there was an emergency, like, okay, well, that's the real one. And they did like switch back to the proper fork. And so we were like, that's possible. When the network is too small, it can branch off and to create two different networks that don't agree with each other and ignore each other and clash. And so we were like, there's some issues there. There's issues with cracking cryptography and things like that. And then I know people who are like, the government is awful. This is not government money. I'm buying it. And I'm like, you got to think about this. I'm like, no. And they bought a ton and now they're all rich.
Yeah. I think sometimes when I'm investing, I think too far ahead. And I got to remember, I'm playing with the lowest common denominator. I have to buy the stuff that most people are going to bite at. Even though the stuff that's better
might not get popular until later. So you got to kind of almost dumb yourself down to make money in the investment market in a way. It's more about reading people.
All right. Ryan says, if you got a problem with Canada Gooses, then you got a problem with me. Letterkenny. I don't know who that is.
Letterkenny's a TV show. It's a really, really funny TV show.
Well, all right. Yeah. A true free thinker says those that carry empty gas cans in Ottawa are like those that were on Thomas Crown Affair wearing the bowler hats and carrying briefcases. You are all fantastic. You ever see that? Thomas Crown Affair?
I think so.
It's where he's like stealing the painting and then like there's a ton of people who all look exactly like him running around and the cops don't know which one is which and who to get.
Yeah, that's, what's his name's in that? Bond.
All right. David says, don't forget Joe has a wife and kids. He has to think about them, too. It's not just him. For sure. But, you know, how much money is enough money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just shows it's not about money. It's yeah, never. Exactly. It's not. It's about you just can't stop. You know, you got to keep
working. I don't think they're going to starve.
It's about capital, which is people's willingness to work with you and the amount of money you can acquire. But usually the money is used to get capital. They call money capital, but it really doesn't have any value until you transact it.
All right. Grommans says, hi, I went to the Honkening in Ottawa on Saturday wearing my Step-On Sneck shirt and found Viva live streaming, sent an email to Pitches. Oh, it was the Step-On Sneck and Find Out shirt.
We saw that video.
Yeah.
We saw it?
Yeah, we saw it.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Step-On Sneck. So I will say this. Step-On Sneck and Find Out was our fastest selling t-shirt.
So good.
It was ridiculous. And then we made the free honk honk flag t-shirt, and that is now our fastest selling t-shirt. It's crazy. We've sold many, many, many of those. So, my friends, if you haven't already, smash that like button. One like is one honk. Subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends, and go to timcast.com, become a member. We are going to start recording our members-only podcast for all of you. It'll be up around 11 or so p.m. tonight. You don't want to miss it. You can follow us at TimCastIRL on Instagram for clips. You can follow me at TimCast on Instagram, Twitter, wherever. You want to shout anything out, Greg?
I'm Greg underscore Price 11. Let's go win in November.
Right on.
Awesome. Well, first I have to correct a bit of non-medical misinformation for myself earlier in the show. Right after I said it, I realized it, but the conversation had moved on. I mentioned Nazi Germany ending in the late 40s. It was the mid 40s.
Yeah.
And none of you corrected me.
It was
me.
Late 45.
None of you. But yeah, but that's not like a late 40s. I know.
I thought it.
Like, what was it? No, it was early 45. It was early 45.
June 40.
It was May.
That's early 40s,
half of 45.
Seamus.
I know.
You blew that one.
Mid. We'll go with mid. I wasn't that wrong.
I'm with you,
man. But yeah, I just want to plug Freedom Tunes. It's the cartoon channel that I run. We release a video every single week on Thursdays. We're also going to be releasing a video tomorrow about the Joe Rogan controversy. Just a short little tune that Tim did a voice for. It was wonderful, and I think you'll all enjoy it very much. And then we have a video coming out on Thursday as well, too, this week. Crazy.
I know that, you know, you guys have your position for me over at Freedom Tunes, but I'm telling you, man, I can do more. Just give me the opportunity for more characters, man. Just
coming on a little strong. You're coming on a little strong.
You've right. been typecast.
It's like you do a great job with Fauci. All right, I'm leaving it there. Right.
Hey, Lydia, is it true that you created the Honkaboot and Find Oot?
That's correct. That was my idea.
That is amazing.
I know.
You're very creative.
Honkaboot.
No, but you've done other voices besides Fauci.
Yeah, like SJW and
the police officer. But it's almost more fun to just let people figure out because a lot of times not everyone watches the credits.
It'll say it
in there, and so people are like, oh, I can't believe Tim did that voice.
I don't think I'm good police officer-wise.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I think you
Well, then I'll give the job to someone else.
You need, like, an older, gruff guy.
That's you. You're so gruff and older.
That's so gruff.
No, you do a good job. You do a good job voicing the police officer. I thought so, but if you want to talk yourself out of the job, you're just telling me that you do more of the Fauci, and as soon as I put on another role, you're like, nah, I'm not good at it.
What? I never said
but
that.
But that means you're hired for more because you're honest about your limitations.
R.I.P. to the Fauci bobblehead, by the way. I don't know if you guys saw the vlog, but Luke had his way with it and then
Luke
fixed it.
Luke is an animal.
Yeah, he's a wild thing.
He's a wild one. No, he and I were on the vlog and he's sitting there blaming China as he holds Tim's shattered Fauci bobblehead wrapping gaff tape.
I'm actually mad about that.
Yeah, it was sad.
I thought it wasn't cool. He's like, it's just
buy
cheap
two
Chinese
more.
Stuff.
Yeah. Where one goes, two
you
come.
Know, so Ian gave me a Fauci bobblehead. Luke broke it trying to put the gorilla on him. And I was like, yo, glue his legs back together. I was like, this is our Fauci. We bobble his head.
We love
and
him.
So instead, Luke just broke it more.
Yeah.
And then he leaves.
He can't help himself.
It's like wrapped it's like in the truth gaff must come tape.
Out. Yeah, it's bad.
You gotta replace it.
I just popped up Twitter. Tim Dillon, definitely cancel the Olympics forever. It was cool. Now it's dumb enough.
Yes, correct.
From the words of God to you through Tim Dillon. Mm-hmm. Just want to let everyone know Tim's one of my favorite guys. I love that guy. Hey, follow me at iancrossland.net. Transition this off and about to Lydia. I love you all.
Yeah,
and
I'll see you later. Thank you. I also wanted to correct my own little bit of misinformation earlier when we were talking about bones in the leg. The tibia is a larger bone on the inside of the leg. The fibula is a smaller bone on the outside. A fibia is a combination of those two words. That is
so
not
I was
a
right.
real bone.
Shameful.
Huh? Wait, it was tibia?
Tibia is the bone on the outside of the leg.
I was right.
Yeah, you were right. Yeah, so when we came up with a fibia,
you see,
that's
this,
not a
this
real
the,
thing.
This is the problem with accepting that you're wrong and being unsure of yourself. Because if I was just confident and arrogant, like, nope, I'm right. Don't care. Don't. I'm confident.
I never should have
that
said anything,
to me.
Tim.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
Yeah.
But yeah, I just want to correct that because I saw somebody mention that and I was like, that doesn't sound quite right. I just couldn't remember it from anatomy. Anyway, you guys should follow me on Twitter and Minds at Sour Patch Lids.
We will see all of you, every single one of you, now all 35,000 are still watching. Go to timcast.com, become members. We're going to have that members only segment for you tonight and we'll see y'all there.
Bye guys.